Blog Talk Radio.
Live. On Blog Talk Radio. The Candid Frank Live Show.
Candid Frank Live.
With.
About half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger.
Candid Frank Live.
Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike, the CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale. Manasseh, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medin. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th man, John Inch. So it's a shallow group today. You know, dip my foot in the pool. And so I get this message on Facebook. And, you know, I love getting messages on Facebook. It kind of makes my day. It does, really. And it went like this. Okay, I'm bored with nothing to do. So I guess you can call me at blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. I'll wait for up to 20 minutes. So I'm even given a freaking deadline. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my friend and great supporter of the show, Serge Develetien.
Hello, how are you?
Wah, wah, wah.
Well, it's been a while, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we know why you're here. I mean, and we might as
I'm
well
bored,
talk.
I got nothing to do.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, you know, the Raptors played
tomorrow.
Yeah, they play tomorrow, and you know what? Let's talk a little bit about them because they are in fact, Canada's team.
Feel good story in Toronto. You know,
it's a great story in Canada as well because. I truly believe that basketball is hitting its stride in Canada, you know, where we are really becoming not just a place for an NBA team, but a place for players to develop and grow and play in very important college games. You know, there are thousands and thousands of college basketball players, and, you know, Canada contributes, you know, maybe 10, 15 good ones, right? But still... That's pretty good when you consider our country is one-tenth the size and probably 90% hockey crazy.
Yeah. Maybe 5% football crazy, but anyways.
Well, that number is growing. That number is growing. And we're doing our part to make it grow. Just join us on CFL Is, and it will continue to grow thanks to you. We all have our favorite teams. And fortunately for you know, Canadian basketball fans, if it's at all patriotic, because I'm not a Montreal Canadiens fan, first of all. But that doesn't mean that my Canadian, my red-white doesn't take over. You know, I ignore the blue with the, you know, I'm the blue blanc, not the rouge. I'm sorry, the blue rouge, not the blanc.
But you're an Argo fan.
So not the blue. Yeah, no. My only blue is
like
Argo blue. That's the only blue I like is Argo blue. The rest of me
blue.
Is all about red, white.
Blue that's like the Habs blue. Anyway.
Yeah. That's okay. I forgive them for the blue that they have in their color scheme. They have a lot of red, white, and they are the Habitants.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and they are Canada's team right now because they, in fact, are the only team in the playoffs.
That's right.
And even with their greatness, it has been 20-some years since they won a Stanley Cup. But again,
last
they were the
Canadian
last ones.
To do it.
Absolutely. And they'll be the next Canadian team to do it. And then we'll be able to say it again, that they were the last team to do it.
If we win this year, you know, it might set up a streak of, you know, we might have the Cup in Canada for the next few years with different teams, hopefully.
Hey, listen, a little more frequent than 1 year in 20, I'm good with that. I like that. That works for me. That works for me. But then again, that brings us to why, and I'll be honest, and this is, I swear to God, this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The reason I love the CFL is because it's the only professional sports league that has a better than 50-50 chance of a Canadian team winning the championship. Right? And that's, to me, I love watching the glory that is Canada displayed, and, you know, and we get to celebrate. And like I said, I'm not a Montreal fan, but I am a Canadian hockey fan. So, you know, I will not let my prejudice against Quebec or anyone else's prejudice against Quebec obstruct my desire to see another Canadian city be successful if mine can't. I rooted for Vancouver, speaking of Vancouver, when they were in the hunt. Speaking of Vancouver, Christopher Jones has joined us. Welcome, Christopher.
I'm here.
I know you are.
I'll be the man responsible for getting me here tonight. There you go.
Hey, Serge.
Well,
hey,
good thing, because it would have been nobody
speaking
else
on
the air.
We were warming up a bit for the show, so, yeah.
Kelly's been waiting for a phone call.
Okay.
Well, Kelly knows the Rua ritual. Oh, shoot.
He's Facebook.
You don't have your
screen open.
You're right. I just opened it. But I looked. He just put it up like in the last minute or two. It hasn't been long, Kelly. So.
Well, you got to get 20 minutes.
Well, yeah. Well, like, you know, I didn't get an ultimatum from Kelly. So, you know, I feel relaxed about calling Kelly. I actually just looked for Kelly a moment ago. And I was so busy and so amused by Serge's message and his involvement that it did completely distract me. I haven't even posted, you know, the show on Facebook yet. So I think you can understand by that.
I told Kelly you were talking about basketball, so it really didn't matter anyhow.
Well, let's listen. Kelly comes from Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan, believe it or not, with the Huskies, has a pretty good background in basketball, right, Kelly?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, and the Cougars as well from University of Regina. We've got a couple national championships on the ladies' side, and a couple going back to the early '80s, late '70s on the men's side.
Yeah, I know this is a CFL show, but I truly you know, believe that the reason most of us love the CFL is because it's Canadian, and we don't get enough Canadian. And I was just making the joke about the reason I love the CFL so much, I truly do, is that it's the only league with more than a 50-50 chance that a Canadian team will win the championship.
That's right.
It's interesting that on the group we've been talking about Baltimore a bit recently, for whatever reason. I mean, they're they're part of, you know, this league. Even if they're not in it anymore, it's like they're unforgettable.
Absolutely, and I loved how you posted the link to the Rider shop or whatever online there, Serge. It was deadly to see that our
Rider
shop.
I got the emails from Riderville.com, and you know, so I went on. That was quite the.
And
right
just for everybody listening, you know, they carry all these old American team logo shirts and stuff at the Rider shop, so visit it online.
And the fact that they are enamored with the league to the point that not only did their team leave, but another NFL team came in, is a pretty big statement, really, about the game and how attractive it is to people everywhere.
Absolutely. You know, these people have been passionate and not a moment has been spared. Their passion has existed since the day that it was announced that they were getting a CFL team. And some people even before that had lobbied for a Canadian team to take place in their stadium, which had been sitting vacant for, you know, many years.
Yeah, well, that's because they kept getting snubbed by the NFL, so they needed to do something.
Yeah, they wanted to prove that.
I agree, Christopher. But even after after they got their team back, a lot of them never lost their love of the Canadian game or their old team.
Oh no, I agree. I agree. Yep. No arguments there.
But you're right. The majority,
how was it for a majority.
Well, Frank, you're on the Baltimore group, and Chris just joined, so you see how many fans are still. They have a whole Facebook group now, so it's, I think that's the only American team that still has one. So.
Yes, it is.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
there's not many Canadian teams that have one.
You mean ex-Canadian teams, right?
No, Canadian teams.
Well, Ottawa's still waiting.
How many Canadian teams have Facebook groups?
All of them.
Well, Montreal has one.
All of them.
Calgary doesn't really have an active one, especially this off season. Not on Facebook.
Sure,
they do. You know,
Calgary.
Well, they have like a like this page or whatever, or maybe I'm banned from
Frank.
I don't know.
wait a minute. Okay, now Frank is sorry. I'm slow.
Even your boat logo page is not a group; it's just a fan page.
Right. Exactly.
Well,
just like this, then.
Well, that's
it's not a group
page,
like CFL is, or the Lions Stand, or Swaggerville, or All Riders group.
Yeah,
right.
It's not a group, but you know, the Ticats have a lot of them.
Well, the great thing about this Baltimore group, Frank, is that, and you know, you're a member at the group there. You know, for people listening, you know, these people are posting just about daily in that group. And, you know, like I said, there hasn't been a minute where a passion has escaped these people for this team. And, it's just amazing. I mean, and it's really fun to be a part of as just a general CFL fan.
Yeah, no, I posted, I think once or twice I posted the show in there, and they asked me not to do it because it had nothing to do with the Baltimore Stallions. That's not my
right.
fault.
Well,
that's not my
fault. We talk about them. I mean, we would talk about them. Like, I got countless stories. I witnessed the Grey Cup here in Regina in 95, so I talked to these guys quite a bit about that experience. But, I could go on about them for hours and hours and hours. I mean, very fond memories of this team and Jim Sparrows and Jim Pop, of course.
Great team. Unfortunately, to me, it was not so much. This is not. I just don't like and didn't like the unfair way players were used on, you know, for the betterment of the American teams and for the detriment of Canadian teams. So I'm against American expansion based solely on the lack of fairness that it breeds. That's all. And that's...
If that happened.
What? You don't think that there was a lack of fairness?
Well, there was definitely a lack of...
I mean,
there was.
There was an advantage to being an American
time.
Team. Well, like I said, I think I agree with you. What I said agrees with what you're saying. The point is that if there's a, no pun intended, if there's a level playing field and the goalposts are the same width apart as are the sidelines, why not? Well, I agree. Why?
Yeah.
You know, this is Canadian football. It's the football that's Canadian. The type of football is Canadian. So it isn't a betrayal to Canada, you know, to have American teams come in. We just can't let them control the game, that's all. Because Americans are like that.
Well,
when they get involved in something, they need to be in charge.
The problem with U.S. expansion was there was six teams that just came on board. We could never do that again. If we're going to do a Canadian content, you can only bring in one team at a time because there's not
you
enough Canadian talent
out
there.
You could max it too. You could max it too.
I mean, look at the hit on the Canadian talent that Ottawa has taken away from the rest of the league right now.
But that's only the talent
that
we're aware of. But that's the talent we're aware of. I happen to think, like Kelly, there's a lot of talent we're not aware of. Your turn, Kelly.
Yeah, no, definitely, Frank. I mean, it's something I've always maintained. That's where guys like Brendan Tamman and the rest of the GMs around the league, that's where they make their bread and butter is sending out their scouting staffs and searching for that diamond in the rough. And they see a lot of guys before they find that diamond, let me tell you, you know. it's a full-time
job. Well, that's my point. Is that,
yeah.
You know, to field 21 players is going to be, you know, to just going out and find 21. It's okay to find four or five, but to find 21 is going to be a bit of a challenge.
No doubt, no doubt. But I'm a guy who loves challenges. After all, I did call Serge.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, I understand that. But what I mean is to start a league with six or eight teams down there and find 21 times six, you know, you're looking at 120 players. That's going to be a challenge to find 120 quality Canadian players.
But yeah. I don't think I think there's been a lot of progress made, and we're not talking about bringing in six teams at once, Christopher.
No,
I understand that.
I'm just saying it can't
happen.
We're
just debating one or two. We're debating with one or two at this point in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have enough for one? I think we all agree definitely. Some of us think that we actually have enough for two. I think Kelly and I fit on that side of the equation. I think we could do two. Yeah, that's all.
For sure.
I have no issues with that. I'd love to see a Halifax team.
Good.
I'd love to see two more, right?
But, I mean, now the math says
we can expand, but we can't expand all at one in 1 year.
And you're 100% right, and I don't think any league can do that. Hockey did it back in the 60s, but that was a different era, a different time when, they had not only this, you know, what people forget is they had – the National Hockey League was the National Hockey League, but the American Hockey League was another reputable professional league that had – a dozen or so teams or more that had talent that everyone knew was being held back. You know, not that they couldn't make the team. They were being held back by virtue of numbers. And also, there were a lot of great players. Yeah. And there were a lot of great players who were politically in the American Hockey League, not talent-wise.
Yeah. No, without question. But I don't think that's a situation that we are in.
No, not in football. We can't. We're not bursting at the seams with Canadian talent. That is a given.
No, that's my point.
Yeah, I get it, and I think we all can agree.
I'd love to see a team up in Anchorage.
What I'd like to see is another Canadian team come in, one more Canadian team, go with 10 Canadian teams, and then maybe bring in two Americans down the road. That's what I would like to see. If that's the case, I'm worried that if we take in an American team. Then all of a sudden the focus will go away from how expanding in Canada to expanding where there's more money, more interest, and more football stadiums. You know,
I think it's pretty much a given the way that Mark Cohan is going with things right now that we're going to see a team in the Maritimes in the next 5 years.
I hope so.
Was there a rumor that the owner of the Detroit Lions or there was something about having
the owner of the Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan.
Yeah,
is a Canadian, a billionaire, and a Greek guy by his name, I think, and he has copious amounts of money, and he's renovating the Silver Dome to a CFL-size field.
Yeah.
And he wants to bring in Major League Soccer, and he wants to bring in CFL football into Pontiac, Michigan, which is Detroit, right, basically.
Yeah, and he could probably get away with calling his team Detroit/Windsor,
sure.
To keep the Canadian, flavor, if you will.
Let's not forget, guys, too, there was a Detroit in the league back in the 20s, I believe, or maybe even teens.
Yeah.
So, sure, it was short-lived and it was a long time ago, but I love the historical value that a Detroit Windsor franchise would bring back to the league.
And yeah, I agree with you. Bruce is definitely saying no. No U.S. expansion. We need more Canadian teams before anything. You could quote me on that. Boycott any American team. No, 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 no.
Yeah, he's pacing.
Maybe if we could get a couple hundred thousand Americans to move to the cities that would push them over the edge, then maybe that would happen. You know what I mean?
Well, hey, look. Let's face it. The moving to Detroit is not a primary, location, I don't think, in the CFL's mind. But in all honesty, guys, and let's be clear here. The invitation has been laid out to the Maritimes for the past 10, 12 years. They've been invited to become a part of the CFL. They've been involved in the conversation with the CFL directly and Mr. Cohan. And he has in his State of the Union, his last state, latest state, not last, that implies he's leaving, the latest State of the Union address, he mentioned that they are pursuing a team, you know, there in the Maritimes. And if the Maritimes, you know, falls asleep at the wheel and just all of a sudden the majority of people say, you know what, we don't want to spend that money, forget it. It'll not be a bad backup plan for Detroit if Quebec City continues to be a place monopolized by a certain rich guy that runs football there that wants nothing to do with the CFL. We may have to expand, you know, to Detroit just because it just doesn't make sense to have nine teams, guys. This to me is ridiculous. Nine teams, an odd number, just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, I just like the bye week when your first week out of the year, like Ottawa this year, their first week one is their bye week. You know? Who needs a week
what a rip
one
off.
Bye
can you
week?
Can you imagine getting married on the honeymoon? The wife says, listen, we're just going to relax today. We're having a day off. A what?
Yeah, it's a bye week.
have a bye week of your first week. That's just a little too much. And you know what? I'm not blaming anybody, and I'm not saying it's a deal breaker or it's a horrible thing, but it sure doesn't have great optics, does it?
No. I mean, even week two, three, or four doesn't make sense, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, with the negotiations stalling, you know, maybe that first week bye might be, anyways, they might use it as...
Who said the negotiations have stalled?
Stop. He has not been here many times. He is not aware of the words that should not be uttered on this program. And negotiation in reference to anything other than contracts with individual players is not approved in this. You don't want to end up where we're going, Serge. Okay.
Right.
So
last week they had talks going on in Calgary, and that nobody is talking one way or the other, but two sides are negotiating at this point in time.
Good, and let's let them do their job and let them get it done.
Yeah, it's not
and we've
our
done
job
our
to
fair,
deal with
we've,
it.
Yeah, we no, we've had our fun with it, right? And I think we've made our point very clear. And at the end of the day, what has to happen? And sorry, honey, that I said that. We have an obligation. We have an obligation as fans to talk about the game. You know, we don't have to talk about the politics. But, you know, this discussion about bringing in teams is another thing that we really don't have much say in. But we have a lot of interest in, and it does pique the interest of fans everywhere. Because
what's our league?
The more teams there are, to a certain extent, you know, the more teams there are, you know, the better it is. It's like we have a nice, you know, cozy little barn, you know, and a nice home, you know, a cottage or whatever, you know, because we end up getting entertained. It's nice and cozy, but we want to invite a few more friends in because, you know, a few more friends would make it a lot more fun. You know, we're not talking about getting carried away. We're just, you know, a few more friends to help, you know, create a little more excitement. And I think, you know, the excitement that Baltimore had, guys, you guys are right. Like that is so laudable and so applaudable. That I'm beside myself when I think about an American city that in love with a Canadian team, a Canadian game team, I should say, and still holding that love, decade and a half later?
Well, it's their 20th anniversary, actually, this year.
There you go.
2 decades. Yeah.
Also, a city that knows football, being the former home of Johnny Unitas and the many greats that were on those courts.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
and the only city to lose their team in the middle of the night.
Don't say that. Cleveland lost their team to Baltimore.
Yeah, but it wasn't in the middle of the night.
They woke up one morning
and said, "We're leaving. See you later."
U-Haul truck showed up and off it goes. Frank, the one problem that I see with your concept of expansion, and I'll lay it out there just because. I think 10 teams is the perfect number for the CFL. That means that with 10 teams, we have an 18-game schedule. You play each of the 9 teams that you oppose twice.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more than that, then you're going to, I'm only going to play Montreal once a year or you know what, we're only going to play, you know, Eastern teams once each and the Western teams twice each.
You're 100%.
And then you guys only play. And then you get an unbalanced, you get an unbalance into the quality of football in a division where you've got an Eastern team who only plays, wins Eastern games, is now, you know, at the top of the league, yet they didn't play the Western teams. I'm using that as an example.
No, you're right, because
that is
the downside of all the other leagues, because to play their main opponents or their division opponents, the people in their, like, for example, in our case, the East, they literally can't play teams in the West.
Right.
You know, and you're right. You're 100% right. Well, that's the beauty of the Canadian Football League, and that's why I use the term cozy. Like, you know, we have a cozy league. Our league is, you know, we know each other pretty well. We all get to visit each other once, right? And there aren't many leagues that afford fans the opportunity to go watch their team play in every other city.
No, nor do I think that you can find a U.S. team, an NFL team, where the fans know all the players on all the other teams.
Right.
Yeah.
Even,
you know,
if they,
even a division, yeah. Chris. Even a division.
Yeah, even inside a division, whatever, you know, there's just too much. It's just too many people. It's like the NFL, NHL as well. It used to be where we knew everybody. Now there's 30 teams. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and not only that, you know, they were saying, and Serge, you're aware of this, in Montreal there's a lot of talk. I'm going to switch it to hockey, but just to make the point. In Montreal, their team, the media was starting to make these noises about how the Montreal team in their last playoff performances, the last two playoff performances, won the first two games and lost the third. And the last team to do that was 2011. And Serge, correct me if I'm wrong, there are only 6 players from that team on Montreal right now.
Could be. I mean, yeah, Montreal in 2006 and 2011 won their first two on the road and would lose in 6 to Carolina and then to 7 to Boston. So now it's, you know, try not to be the second team after Boston in 2010 to lose a 3-0 lead. So I don't think it'll happen, but you never know.
But I don't think it'll happen either. You know, Tampa doesn't have the goaltending.
It wasn't bad, but, you know, Price.
They don't have the goal. When you compare him to Price, Serge, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the goaltender that's the best right now in the world, I've been watching every playoff game, and I have not been impressed by many goaltenders in the playoffs. I don't know about you, but I haven't been very impressed with a lot of goaltenders. You get a guy like Quick.
If you're going to go all the way, it's up to Price.
Quick, 11 goals in 2 games.
Okay,
back to CFL.
Right, but anyways, for CFL,
so the point
if we do
is,
get 10
sorry.
Teams, then we wouldn't need
sorry.
Divisions anymore because every team would play each other twice, so we could just have a one, you know, 10
and
team.
And now joining us is John Granger. John, do you want me to call you, or you want to hang in this
way? Yeah, sure, let's try that. Hello, fellas, call me back. All
okay.
Right.
Hi, John.
Oh, wait.
Nice talking with you.
All right.
Bye, bye.
Talk to you in a bit. Call me back, Frank. Bye.
Yep.
Let's not call him, no.
Ah, shoot, his line's busy.
Shucks, eh?
I'm just kidding. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So no, I only mentioned that because in total honesty, that Montreal is a perfect example, a team, and they're only an example. I mean, they're all like that. There's only 6 players on the team that was on it a short 3 years ago. So yeah, you know, the nice thing about the CFL is even if you lose players, they're going to 1 of 8 other teams now, which are not hard to keep track.
No, and you still can follow them, and they'll still talk to you on Facebook, and, you know, they're still – I mean, that's the thing about the CFL that's wonderful to me. I mean, I had a 3-hour conversation today with a BCD lineman, okay, on Facebook. We chatted back and forth for 3 hours. You
so
find me an NHL player that will do it.
Are you sure he was listening to you?
Oh, yeah. It's part
sure
of what I
want
to talk about tonight.
Are you sure it was in a prison cell?
Or in the basement of his parents' house?
3 hours for alignment on a Facebook? Oh, man, that guy should go work out. I don't know if your team's on the Facebook for 3 hours fans. They're going to be trouble season.
Ed, John, come on. You've had your long conversations with football players, too. So you know.
Never 3 hours. I don't think I don't want to talk to him for 3 hours. No, I'm just joking.
The truth is the guys are approachable. So John Granger, Argo Lifer.
That was my point. I wasn't putting it out there to be ridiculed.
Oh, touchy. Poor. Let's get some balls here, Chris.
I've had a bad day, okay?
That's part of it. Wah, wah. It's a show. Pick it up a little. We just kid, fellas. Don't we kid? That's all it is.
We do.
I hear you're talking expansion. Quote, unquote, go ahead. Not while I'm commish.
Baloney, John. In his last address, listen to his own words. He said, "We're talking to Halifax. Yes, we're contemplating going to Halifax.
We're talking south of the border, fella. I'm not talking about Baltimore, Detroit expansion. At Facebook, and I told you, quote unquote, I talked to him and Chris Rudge when I was volunteering for the Grey Cup festivities, and we're in the hall, and I kind of threw it at him because he saw my Baltimore button on me, and I said, is this ever going to be an idea again? He goes, no, well, I'm commish. So.
And that's okay. Nobody's demanding. I don't think anybody's demanding that we expand into the U.S., but we are saying, what we are saying is 19 is a bad number. And Christopher himself said, while you were calling in, he said himself, 10's a perfect number because we all get to play each other twice.
True.
Yeah.
So, that's
a bad idea.
And Frank, you said it three times, and the fellas didn't get it. I was cracking up, but you said, what I love about the CFL is that at least we have a 50-50 chance of a Canadian team winning.
We knew exactly what it was. We were just ignoring him.
We got it, John. Frank's waiting for every little. Yeah,
we
were just agreeing, talking on. 50-50.
We're just ignoring him.
Okay, whatever. I was cracking up. That was good, Frank.
But out of respect for Serge, I wasn't going to say that because Montreal has a chance of winning every year. Oh, ouch.
I'll be honest, on that kind of note, Frank,
it was kind of funny today. I posted a couple of links up for Debbie Wormspecker.
Okay. Yeah.
And YouTube videos that I had found, and I post them up on her wall. And she says, what is this? It's not available in your country. And I said, well, it worked in Vancouver. I guess you got Saskatchewan. You need a passport. So
well, that does happen. No, I'm in love with Quebec.
That's a whole
again.
Other country, that flatlander in the middle.
I love Quebec again. So, they've got a premier who believes that he's a part of Canada, and that's all I ever wanted out of Quebec. And
I went to the
same
school, by the way.
Did you? Now, I like hearing that. Serge, there's nothing I like worse than people being associated with me that don't want anything to do with me. You know, that bothers me. That bothers me. I'd rather not be a part of, I'd rather not associate.
I understand that.
You know what I mean? So Christopher lives it.
Frank, are you zipping wine again? You're coming up with good ones. I like it.
No, I got no wine tonight. Tonight is, I took my medication and I'm good.
Oh, finally.
So I got a heads up that apparently from the poster in the Montreal's group that Calvillo's should be honored for the home opener July 4th against the Lions. I don't know if they're retiring his number or not. I'm assuming they will, but
sure they are.
That should be the day that he's going to have his day. So,
yeah.
Or,
wow. Yeah.
Or they're going to insert terrific. Him in the lineup.
Oh. Maybe he'll take one snap and then retire. And then
yeah, there you go. There you go. Hey, a great quarterback, and he's all part of this conversation we had because he started on an American team.
Yep, Las Vegas.
The Posse. Yep.
Which you can find on YouTube.
Well, I liked him as a tie cat. I liked him as a tie cat. I he didn't look right. He didn't look
he
like
wasn't
a quarterback.
Very good as a tie cat.
No, I liked him as a tie cat. That's where I liked him.
Yeah, John, think about now you're being selfish. Now you like him because they were on the wrong end of the Argo. They were on the wrong end of the Argo.
Well,
guys. We have three representatives of Canadian teams here, John and Frank for the Argos, Christopher for BC, and myself. Did Montreal benefit from those American teams or what? Mike Pringle, Tracy Gravely.
Good Lord.
Gerard
Bayless. Some of those players.
Cal
Argos.
Don Matthews. Man, Montreal benefited. Montreal
coach
benefited as well.
But
you
to
know
be
how
honest, when I got hooked in 96 at CFL, it did have to do with the Ticats and Calvillo, because late in the year there was that 39-38 win by Hamilton over Montreal, and then the rematch was 45-41. So I went to the playoff game expecting, you know, it was Mac Cody and Calvillo. They were just lighting it up. So when he came to Montreal a couple of years later, even in spite of the 97 season, I felt like this guy was going to, you know, was going to be good for us.
And he was.
For sure. And he was.
And he was.
Yeah,
you know what?
With a good O-line and a good, you know, when he's well surrounded, you know, and he had to mature a couple of years under Tracy Ham. So and that was important, too.
So Serge, what's your expectations for Troy Smith?
I have no expectation in the sense that it's his first year, technically, for first full year, rookie year. So it's a new era. Last year was the end of an era. It's the start of a new era, new head coach, new quarterback, new system. So I have, you know, I think the Owls are looking pretty good, but because it's a new team, you never know. There might be some growing pains. We'll see.
So you didn't see anything in the last four games last year to make you think this guy might be the answer going forward, or?
Definitely. I mean, this guy, he impressed me a lot, definitely. He has the potential. But, I mean, it's one thing to play four games late in the season. It's another thing to play, you know, he's never played a full season up here, and, you know, we'll see how he does. But that's the thing that that a lot of people didn't realize or appreciate about Calvillo was the fact that he played so many games, missed so few. He had this longevity, and he was like an old pair of socks, you know, you take for granted. But in reality, time will show that, you know, very few quarterbacks are able to play it as long and as consistently as he did. So,
wow.
With panache.
No comment.
Yeah.
Serge, he always had a great front line. You know, those guys never got the credit, but he always gave them credit. He always had a great four right in front of him that were always giving them that protection. And in Montreal, I'm not sure in Hamilton as much, but, yeah, still never looked like a quarterback, but he always had a slinger of an arm. You know what I mean? It's in the pocket when he runs.
He looked like a guy. He always looked more like a guy who served beer at a football game.
That's unfair
like
right there, Frank.
He does not look like a football player.
That's an exaggeration on the fact that he is an ordinary-looking guy with an incredible amount of mental toughness and a suitable amount of frame to use it. You know what I mean? He was all brain, you know?
Yep.
He wasn't.
And that brain allowed him to find his receivers in order to get hit as least possible. And, it was the cerebral part of his game that and, you know, he did have a good arm, you know, a cannon of an arm for the CFL purposes.
Sure did.
And,
he sure
precision
did.
And all that.
So did they say anything about him doing anything? I know he's probably going to be in a front office or something. I mean, you know, they have a picture of him.
Gotta be.
Internship right now.
So he's an intern. Yeah.
Nothing announced, though, right? Like,
no, it's official. Like, there was a radio interview with Mark Waitman, the CEO, and he's basically he's an intern and he does a lot of work with the scout team and some of the work at the office as far as, like, you know, going over film with the quarterbacks. But I think he's looking eventually probably be, you know, an assistant GM down the road to Jim Pop. I think he's trying to go down that route instead of the coaching route.
Jim Pop's still around. We'll see. Well, that's another issue. We don't know what's going to happen there. So,
do you want him around, Serge?
Sure, I want him around.
Why not? Yeah.
Does he want to stick around? That's the real question.
He's
because
one of the best GMs
went behind his back in Higgins. So I don't know how that's going to play out. So we'll see.
So Serge, how are the Alouettes viewed in Montreal? Like, do the city love the team? Are they sort of, you know, whatever to them? Or how are they viewed?
You know what it is? It's that, it means it's a tough sell in the sense that, you know, in Quebec it's mainly hockey. Outside of that, it's more difficult. But the core of fans that follow, you know, are loyal to the core. So we got these... You got these, you know, 20-some thousand core fans that, you know, they're never going to leave. They're never going to get away. This year, it was announced that they're going to reduce the number of seats. They're going to cut the – anybody who's been to McGill on the west end zone seats are going to be removed, and they're going to be – it's going to be replaced. It's going to be like a sort of a party zone where fans – from the north side can come over and, you know, take beer, whatever. So they're moving 1,000, so they're going to have 24,000 seats. They're moving – anyone who has season tickets there is going to be moved elsewhere in the stadium. So that they've decided that they feel like they can make more money selling, you know, whatever, instead of, you know, having those temporary seats there. So so we might actually get a sellout or two or more this year if we're lucky at 24,000.
Were they not selling out last year?
No. In 3 years, about 25,000 seats, we're saying. In a sense, in 2010, supposedly they sold out every game, but there was complaints that Larry Smith was giving freebies or were smudging the numbers or whatever. So the last 3 years,
yeah.
It's been after we won back-to-back, we came close a couple of games, but in the last 2 years, it's – but we've never gone below 21. We were always selling out at 20,000, and we've never gone below 21. 21,000 was a home opener in 2012. We haven't gone below that since. We averaged 22,500 in 2012, 23,000 last year. So we got the core. It's just, you know, getting that extra 1,000 or 2,000 fans. And they're out there. It's not that they're not out there. They're out there. It's just they don't want to
they're
come.
They're on campus.
For different reasons.
Where did the 50,000 plus show up that always comes for the Eastern Final when it's at the Big O? Is that sort of like...
From Toronto.
That's like Montreal syndrome, okay? When it's a one-game event happening, especially, you know, a big game like that, you'll get 50,000, but that's it for season.
They do think of themselves that way. I was doing a little research on the fact that they want to bring baseball back, and they're talking about a ballpark in downtown Montreal.
Well, I'm,
that'll...
I'm not part, but I'm sort of indirectly encouraging, yeah, for sure.
Right.
I want a baseball team back here.
The way they're talking about financing the team is amazing. It's a very interesting in Quebec, and they do in other provinces. We do have an immigration thing where you can buy your way into the country, and the way it works is you basically usually what it is in all the provinces, well, the ones that do it anyway, you come in, you invest in a company, and then you get the money back slowly but surely. Well, this one guy in Quebec has come up with this idea where he says, all right, let's have them come in, pay their 250 grand, and use that money to build the stadium, but make it so they don't get it back, and the stadium ends up belonging to the city. Now, it's a very interesting plan. You know, it requires a lot of foreigners with a lot of money to invest, but it's an interesting way to take the pressure off, you know, being tax dollars. And I guess the reason I'm asking this question right now is, could that stadium be used also for football? And would a new stadium that's more less college, more, ugh, I hate saying pro, because the one that they have that they're using at McGill is a professional stadium, no doubt. But I'll use the term anyway, a more professional stadium, one that's more, you know, independent of the university, would it help draw fans?
I think if there is going to – means we have three or four proposed sites for a new baseball stadium, one of which is the old horse track hippodrome that we don't use anymore. But, no, it would be strictly a baseball stadium.
Baseball.
And the football stadium, McGill, you know, I think 24,000 is a good idea, you know, to reduce it a bit, to have that end zone. And – we have the potential in the future if we, you know, continue to build, and, you know, we have built over 15 years, you know, to bring it back to 25,000, maybe even expand, God forbid, one day to 30,000, in that we got the Royal Vic Hospital next door that's going to close because they got a super hospital that's going to be opening. So that potentially could create some space for, you know, either parking space or expansion or so. That's, you know, you got to look at it. No, I don't see the team ever leaving McGill in any way, shape, or form. So
well, what happened with the stadium as far as, like, when they did the renovation? I remember it was supposed to be three phases, and the final phase was supposed to replace the bleachers with red seats, and they never seemed to get around to doing that. So what happened?
Well, no, we had permanent seats in the east end zone, but not in the west. They were always temporary, and there's not a whole lot of space there to begin with between the end zone and the fans, which was kind of fun for the fans who were there. But, no, they made the decision that for now, as it stands, that they're going to leave that area open. And they're going to do something. Because one of the problems in that stadium is that anyone who's been there, you got to walk up the mountain. You got to walk up to go up to the north end, and that's a huge walk. Now fans on the north end can go out the south end by the bottom without having to go back up and through the back end zone. So it's more practical, and I think 24,000 is a good. It's a good number because I think the Ottawa Stadium, Hamilton Stadium, I don't know if it's really, it must be close or it's not that much more. And even Toronto moving into BMO, you know, I don't think it'll be more than, I mean, 25,000 in the east seems to be the, you know, sort of like the limit or the upper, you know, the most you can ask for in terms of season, you know, season tickets and all that. So
playoff-wise, are they going to be permanently doing McGill only in the playoffs, or are they still open?
The problem is that you're anyway? In the play for because of a roof issue, although it's weird because we had a couple of baseball games and soccer game, but there won't be any Grey Cups in Montreal for probably until like 2019 because of the roof. So if they got the Vanier is going to be held in McGill, and if there's a playoff game, Easter final or Easter semifinal, it'll probably be in McGill, and they might be able to squeeze in and anywhere between 25,000, 30,000, you know. I think you can see it up to 30,000 and stay within security limits. So,
but I mean, for you as a fan, though, do you prefer, you know, the McGill experience or 50,000 at the Big O?
Well, they're both good in the sense that the Big O only works if there's 50,000. If there isn't, it's not. But McGill, to me, even at 21,000, the lowest we had since we increased, it was still. I mean, it's never. It's always fun. It's never dull, and anybody who comes sees it and knows it. That McGill just has, it has this magic, you know, and that's why we have 17,000-18,000 season tickets that stay there. If they were to decide one day that the team would play all their games at Olympic Stadium, you'd probably see tickets drop in a heartbeat. So it's sort of, you know, we're stuck in a sense, but it's a good kind of suck. So.
Yeah, your primary seats aren't affected. The seats that and John will tell you there are seats that are awful at the Dome. So for the experience of watching the game, McGill is far better. And you know, and to your point that the empty seats, you know, we don't know what that's like in Toronto watching a game with a lot of empty seats around us. So maybe we don't understand what it's like. You know how unfun it is when there's a lot of empty seats. Of course, we understand that completely, Serge. You're 100% right. It ruins the experience.
Yes. Well, I got a season ticket at Rogers, and it's in the 109. It's like on the very edge, and I was there for the East Final last year, and it's a pretty, you know, you're on the edge, but it's a pretty good seat because you're close to the field and you got the screen. You don't have to, so it's you know, even the cheapest seat, even the cheapest seats you can find. And I know the 121 section is, you know, I've been there a few times, and it's not a bad place to watch games.
I think
for Torontonians that don't want to spend a lot of money, you know, you're not that bad off by buying a cheap seat.
No. The Sky Doom now, I guess I can call it. The Sky Doom is doomed to be the home of the Argos. I disagree with John. John says the sight lines aren't that good. I went to the Olympic Stadium. I've been to, I forget what other indoor stadium, and they on their own are a problem. They're problematic because of the roof that exists. The Sky Dome is a totally different place when the roof is open. Totally different.
Nah, the sight lines still suck. The only reason why you don't see it that way, once you go down to the front row and see what your sight line is like when you're looking over the guy's head on the field, they're just horrible. They were designed for baseball, for low sitting. It wasn't designed for football. They start, the real football seats start up row 20.
Yeah,
okay?
No, exactly, where we are.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah,
I agree,
yeah,
John.
So,
but that's not because... In my opinion, that's not because of the stadium. That's because of the design. There are solutions to that problem. You know, the dugout thing would work.
The dugout thing? What do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well,
like topping off the first couple rows, or what do you mean by that?
Well, no.
Dugout.
What stadium in the U.S. has the dugouts where the fans literally don't see the team until they pop out? I don't remember the stadium. But isn't that the one? Right. Do you know what I'm talking about? Help me here, Kelly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
For sure.
And that way it brings
the
field closer to the fans, doesn't it?
Right, you know, one thing that was always great about Ivor Wynn, I'll say, because Bruce isn't here, is their dugouts of the past.
Yeah, that's right. They had them, too.
Yep.
That's right. They had them.
I don't know how that's going to work at the Rogers Center, though.
No, it's not going to work at the
Rogers
Center.
They're not going to do that.
No, the point was, John, that if the field has no obstruction from that from that seat, the only obstruction are the referees and such, it would actually be really nice to sit there if it was just the official.
Just have the guys lay down.
Yeah,
is there any way we can
clear
that obstruction?
No.
It's just so far away from the field. Ivor Wynn and Montreal Stadium. Montreal right now, to me, is probably the coziest. Until I go to Winnipeg. I mean, you know, Winnipeg is the
Unless
ideal
you're in the press
stadium.
Box.
There's some issues with the Winnipeg Stadium right now in terms of leaking and all that. So.
Flooding.
Yeah. Yeah, they got some wrinkles to iron out still. We're not going to say. It's tough to build in Winnipeg. It's tough to build in Winnipeg. You know,
Have any of you guys looked at the virtual venues for either Ottawa or Hamilton's new stadium online?
Yeah, Hamilton's, yeah.
Okay, so if you look at that, those are pretty much the same sight lines you're going to have at the new BMO Field in 2016.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. You know,
anything
at BMO Field is going to be
good. You sent me the picture of the roof, and I love the idea of a roof.
Right. Yeah, I think it looks great. I think you guys are going to love it once it's ready.
And,
I think all four of the new stadiums are going to be wonderful. I mean,
yeah. But they're all going to be identical.
Kidney.
That's the funny thing. Like, the new BMO Field is set up. No, it's not a bad thing. I just think it's kind of funny how that and Ottawa's are going to look exactly the same as far as the seat layouts, the only difference being the color. Yeah, but it's going to be nice.
We all had grandstands, too, Manasseh.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny. Like, the East copied each other. Everyone looked at Montreal. They liked that model, and they decided to all go ahead and copy that, and I think it'll work out in the future.
But you know, the best sight lines possible, that should be the primary objective of a football-only stadium. And if it's shared with somebody else, you try to achieve that the best you can, like John says. Like, while John says he doesn't like the – John's very – you know, he's a connoisseur of going to football games. Me, on the other hand, I eat off the – you know – off the kids' menu. So, you know, I'm happy with being there and at least being able, because I didn't like the Montreal experience. The Eastern Final where we sat, my gosh, it felt like we were in a different area code.
Were you guys in the upper deck?
No.
Oh, good Lord. No.
No. I don't know, Frank, you guys sat, I think.
The way it works, Manasseh, just imagine, you walk down 20 rows. Now you're the front row of the bottom ring, right?
You got
me?
Yep.
And you're about 100 feet in the air.
Wow.
No, they're horrible at
the O. I'm exaggerating.
It's just
it's
horrible.
About, what? Sarah, help me out. I only was there once.
Where were you guys?
Huh?
Like, were you behind the Argos, the bench, or where were
no,
you?
No, we were in the corner.
Opposition
we were in the
bench.
Corner.
Oh, in the corner,
we were in
okay.
The corner.
Oh, were you right where Bratton, where the ball hit Bratton, or right? In front of him? Or?
Well, no, where we were was, if you're looking at the stage when the Argos accepted the Eastern Conference Championship trophy, we were on the directly to the right of them.
God.
Oh, that's a terrible spot. Dang, I see what you mean. You guys are like must have been like 100 miles away.
Anywhere in that place, really, unless you're dead center, right behind the bench, unless you're there, and even there, you're pretty high up. Like, I mean... You know, it was just not built. It's a horrible place to watch anything. Even, I don't know, baseball is kind of cool to watch. It's a nice baseball feel. But, can't stand football. I mean, that's the one thing I'd never liked about Montreal winning the East is having to go there all the time. So, you know, hopefully it'll be in somewhere else. Sorry, Serge.
Right.
But it's interesting that the largest crowd in CFL history was at the Big O against the Argos in 77. The Argos won that game 14. So that stands as the largest CFL all around, 69,000.
How big was it?
Yeah.
69?
Wow.
69,000.
Yeah,
69,000.
Yeah.
Well,
that's huge. Was the Owls' first loss after 7 straight wins. But that was,
I just remember,
was,
like...
Leo Cahill, was the coach.
Right. I remember my first CFL game I ever watched was the 2010 East Final at the Big O, and I was just blown away because I didn't think there were even that many CFL fans at the time, and to see 59,000 at the Eastern Final and the noise they made. I thought
that was pretty amazing.
And
then we kind of, because that's how it is. We reached our peak after winning back-to-back, and after that it's almost like people started already, they got fed up. It's like they knew we weren't going to win three in a row or something. So that's how it is. You know, we just
People become jaded.
We were at our best, and then things came back to reality a bit.
But Shimmer, you must be excited about this year because, I mean, your team is stacked, right? I mean, talent-wise, other than quarterback, you're pretty much the same as you were in 2010.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to feel good about this year. And, you know, I expect, you know, hopefully an average in the 22 to 23,000. But you got to understand that at the present pricing of tickets, because that went up quite a bit, if you compared it to 2008 prices, we'd be like 30,000 equivalent of the money we're bringing in with the tickets compared. So the prices have gone up quite a bit here, and that the fact that we can still manage 22 to 23,000 average at these prices, it's
to me, it's the cheapest ticket.
Well, a step forward, so.
What's the cheapest ticket in Montreal?
I think it's, well, it was $28 in the end zone, and I think 30, 35 or 40 in the corners. So
that's the league average. What about the highest? What's the highest?
The highest is in the 100 to 110, I guess.
Not bad.
But yeah, I know that a lot of teams mentioned that you know, Montreal was considered probably one of the most high-priced place to get a ticket for, you know, to sit pretty much.
Kelly, what are the prices in Saskatchewan, which I would think the only reason they're not higher priced is because of the sheer volume of fans?
Yeah, no, you're looking at basically what Serge said for the Montreal prices, and it's been that way for a while.
Wow.
You're going to see them. You're going to see them each go up $10 though right away. So there you go. And that's for the Riders and the city to be able to recoup the amount that they're putting in for the stadium. So,
well,
right.
MLSC already promised us a big hike.
Yeah.
What's
going to happen in Hamilton and Ottawa as well. They said that's why when you do that whole 25,000 seat thing is to drive up the demand, thus prices go up. So
Bruce
John Inch, I think Bruce was saying like season tickets in Hamilton, the price has gone like significantly higher than it was back in Ivory Wynne already, and some people are already complaining. But you know, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, so good.
You know. But Hamilton's not an economic boon place, you know. Like, they
right.
got to be careful with that group of fans. They deserve, hopefully they'll give them some consideration. But I guess they already made the decision by virtue of the size of the stadium.
Right. I mean, so season tickets in Montreal, like, the most expensive would be how much for the best seats in the house?
Maybe
what? Over $100. Yeah.
No, I'm saying, like, so that's well per game. So we're looking. It's less than $1,000 for the season, though, right? For a season ticket.
No. It'd be around $1,800. $100 a game, maybe $10 off or $20 off. You know,
it's only nine home games.
That's what I'm saying. It's only nine.
I mean,
Sorry about that.
Home games. So.
Oh, that's great.
It's not, you know, compared to hockey.
Right, because here in Minnesota, like for the Vikings, like in the worst seats in the house, nosebleeds for season tickets, you're paying at least close to $1,000, and that's for the worst seats in the house. Best seats, you're looking anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000. So that's, you know,
yeah,
it's pretty good considering.
Yeah, definitely different.
The Lions tickets start at $42.
Mike was here and left. Mike?
Lions tickets start at $42?
What, the worst seats in the house are $42?
They don't really have bleachers at BC Place. You know what I mean?
Hang on. I found another category. Nine equals $30 for the end zone.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess because it's an NFL caliber stadium.
And it goes up from there. And top seats in the house are like $1,100 for nine.
Wow.
So
plus, I like the attitude. It's not we're going to bring down price to bring more people. It's to say, you know, these are our prices. Take them or leave them.
This is the new way. This is the new way it works. You know, in sports now, there's a system in place for how to drain the fans as much as you can. And you know, the new thing is it's not so new anymore. But it's, you know, Montreal. Is Montreal doing what Toronto's doing? That you pay more for depending on who's coming to play.
No. 1 year they did that when we had a new president that came from the Habs, and that's the only year they did it.
They don't do it anymore.
As long as
So long as supply exceeds demand, they can't do things like that. So forget it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just an extra way.
The terrible thing in BC is that we don't own our stadium and we don't control our stadium. And so the BC Lions, actually, their rent is based on a lot of things, and one of them is how many concession stands are opened. So they don't get the revenue from the concession stands, but if they open up additional concession stands, their rent goes up. So if they lowered the prices and opened up more seats, it actually costs them more money.
How stupid
wow.
is that?
That's ridiculous.
Well, that's
what
happens
when
your stadium is owned by the provincial government.
Well, I think that's the only way they could have... That's the only way they benefited from the, what, almost $450 million renovation to BC Place, and they didn't have to pay a penny down, right?
But
right.
Well, true,
right.
But then it's always been this way.
Oh, even
right
in the old?
One.
Wow.
Right from since 1986 when it was built, it was based on how many concession stands were basically
Wait, so
because it's the staffing.
Right, so what's their lease on the stadium? Like, what do they
have
to
no
pay
idea.
Every year?
I have no idea. It's not public
okay.
knowledge.
Oh, okay.
They must sell the pop and beer pretty cheap.
No, they
but
do
I mean,
not.
Because the math doesn't work for me.
Beer.
I don't know about you guys.
But I'm saying, Christopher, aren't they the primary tenant of the building? Like, aren't they the main draw for BC Place?
Well, no, that and the Whitecaps.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Whitecaps don't even go there. They have to tarp off the thing. They don't even open the upper deck. But I'm saying, like, before the Whitecaps showed up, all these years, hasn't the BC Lions been the main thing at BC Place other than,
yep.
like, concerts? Right, so that's...
Correct.
So why do they have such
but
a bad
you
setup?
You can't call them the main tenant when there's only 9 games in a year when there's, you know, 32 concerts or whatever.
Right. Okay.
So,
yeah,
you know, it's difficult
the promotion,
to call them
the
main
concert promotions people are have more pull.
Are way better, yeah.
Okay.
And they fill the place.
But that's why we CFL fans, we should push for a 30-game schedule.
yeah, right.
Just to help sell concessions.
Tell the players that.
Yeah.
You think they complain about it?
I want the ice pack. I want the ice concession for the CFL, okay? I want to be able to sell them the ice. I think that would be a good thing.
But there was one big change in Montreal this year because they pulled the fans, and we used to have games Thursday nights. No more this year. People have decided that Friday nights was better. Because Thursday, you know, you have work the next day. So there was a bit of a radical change this year. We won't have any more Thursday night games.
Good for you guys. Here in Toronto,
Friday
they
or...
tell us they're going to play a game on a Tuesday, and we go, okay.
Yeah.
I heard a stadium rumor for Regina, and at this point it is just a rumor. But as John and Frank had suggested in Toronto, you know, MLSE isn't going to reveal all their cards and tell the public, pretty luxury, because then the public kind of feeds back. Well, same thing in Regina, but I did hear we're getting a 35-man hot tub in one of the end zones, and fans will, like, be randomly drawn.
I've heard this, too.
So,
they won't be alone in the hot tub.
Suit.
And they won't be alone in the hot tub.
You know what? Guys, this is so wrong on so many levels. It's like going to the Bahamas and going to a swim-up bar, and some guy's sitting at the bar for 8 hours drinking. You know he's never left the pool.
Oh, for sure. No, it's
okay.
We've always,
so now you're talking about 104 degrees, and it's fermenting?
Oh, come on, man. That's
what we got chlorine and bromine for, my friend. I mean, there's things to deal with that.
Not everything has to be brought to beer or wine, okay?
I'm not getting in that hot tub. I would not get in that hot tub under any circumstances.
Well, you'd be having less fun than the people in the hot tub.
I don't think that's the big question, guys. The big question is, will she go in the hot tub?
Right.
Yeah, free Molson products, boys. I think that'll get a lot of people in the tub.
She'll probably go in the tub with the swimming, you know, deep sea diving.
Get it out, Frank.
Yeah, I can't. Forget it. I think you get what I'm hearing.
Before we let Serge go, we got to, since, you know, we've already let our opinions known on how the East is. So how do you rank out the East then, Serge? You got Montreal
right
ahead of Toronto, or how do you got it all ranked out?
I don't know. It's Montreal. They could finish first, like they could finish last. They could go either way. No, it's
oh, come on. You know they're not going to finish last, right? You know that much, right?
Oh, I mean, the East looks very competitive this year. And
right.
It looks like every game is going to be it's going to be tough. And Ottawa, you know, we made fun of their name, we made fun of their mascots, but I think when they think we won't make so much fun of, you know, the team that's going to be on the field.
How they play.
Ottawa in their first year, they're going to be tough to beat. So, you know, Montreal could finish last maybe with, like, I don't know, six, seven wins or something. So
wow.
I think it could be a real tight, you know, every right down to the wire. So, but, you know, like I said, they could finish first. They could finish anywhere. And the East, to me, is a toss-up. Anybody can, you know, I don't see a team right off the bat that's going to, you know, that's going to crap.
I think Hamilton's a lock for first. A lot.
I don't think so, and not anymore. Like the more
you
look at,
like in '98,
right? Like I've been really looking at Montreal's roster the last couple of days during when they had the whole minicamp thing going on, and I mean, if you compare them to 2010, right now their defense is much better, and offensively, you know, they got I think a better receiving core. The offensive line would be the only, you know, only thing that would be worse, and obviously quarterback, but. All in all, I mean, talent-wise, they're right there with Hamilton. It's just a matter of, is Troy Smith going to be consistent? And if he is, I don't see why they couldn't finish first easily. I think it's between them. The East is Hamilton and Montreal, and then Toronto will be lucky if they can somehow get in the mix.
A three-way tie for first, it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's
not a three-way tie. Like
three,
no,
the three teams, Toronto,
Ottawa, Montreal, and
I
Hamilton?
I have faith that Toronto will turn things around and they'll start bringing some people in, God darn it.
Now, they'll make the playoffs, Frank, but you can't put them in the same category as Montreal.
I'm with Serge. It's going to be so close. Hamilton is a lock for first place, just as much as – I didn't get a chance to finish.
Sure,
just
Frank,
as much as Montreal
I think
is.
Hamilton's the only team that's not going to be last. I think the only thing –
I agree with Serge 100% for all four teams.
I'm serious.
To take your point further, okay, I'll say this. I'll grant you this. That Hamilton won't finish last and Ottawa won't finish first. But aside from those two points, I agree with Serge that every game's going to matter.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, that's
anything
true.
Can happen in the East. That's all.
But, I mean,
I agree with Serge.
Yeah.
I think all of you guys would agree that if you, like, honestly look at it, let's just put all bias aside, it's clear. It's going to be Toronto and Ottawa fighting for the third, battling whoever's coming out of the West for the crossover. And it's Montreal and Hamilton at the top. And it's going to be those
funny,
two teams down to the wire.
It's funny, Manasse, that you come out with your first statement is, you know, without bias, and you're totally biased in the way you're talking.
How am I biased? I have no rooting interest for anybody in the East.
Usually bias is identified by consistently saying the same thing over and over again. People who aren't biased change their mind from time to time. Guys like Mike Townsend.
That's what I'm doing. I changed my mind now. After I've looked at Montreal's roster, I realized that Montreal isn't closer to Toronto. They're closer to Hamilton. And that's what I'm saying.
I used to say Hamilton.
Right.
To finish first. Yeah.
Well, I still
let's
think
make a more accurate prediction. Let's say, you know, after the first six games of the year, which team is going to, you know, have the best start?
Montreal's going to have the best start. I'm going to call that now. Montreal's going to start 5-0,
and
everybody's going to be blown away.
The team that finishes best will win, and will go to the Great Cup. The team that finishes best.
Yeah, see, that's the Toronto bias right there. You're just, you know. Toronto's hope is if they stay healthy. Let's just call it like it is.
I have bad news for you. Manasse, last year with John, before any of you people existed on this program, I told John, and John laughed at me and thought it was stupid of me to say, that Hamilton might beat Toronto in the Eastern Final and end up going to the Grey Cup if Toronto's not careful. Those were my exact words. And I'm saying the same thing again. I'm saying the same thing. No, the CFL is notorious for a team that at the beginning of the year didn't belong in the conversation for the Grey Cup. I mean, we could be sitting here going, you know, and like Kelly just said, lightning in a bottle, all of a sudden – Ottawa makes a trade that makes a difference, and all of a sudden they finish and make it to the Grey Cup. All I was trying to say was everybody's a lock for first place, but I didn't get a chance to say that. They're all a lock for first place because, quite frankly, they all have problems, and they all have positives. They all have problems, and they all have positives. Hamilton doesn't have a quarterback yet.
Oh, no, no, don't. Come on. They
it
have
don't
Zach.
Matter who's going to finish first. It's going to be BC and Toronto in the Grey Cup.
Oh, you wish.
That's
you
what
wish.
Everybody says.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody says
John,
it's always rigged. Everybody says it's always rigged. Everybody says it's always rigged when Toronto or BC are in it. So they're going to be in it. It's always said that they buy the Grey Cup. The Grey Cups are set up. Remember the losers? All the losers always say that the Grey Cup is set up. And it's all planned.
Nobody
way
ever
out of
wins
time.
It because they're good. Nobody ever
no,
wins it
no,
because they're
no.
good.
So this year, for all you guys who keep saying that every year, it's going to be BC and Toronto because
okay.
that's the way they're planned.
I don't even see BC coming out of the West. If Lule is not healthy, BC goes down.
Yeah.
I mean, John, to that point, if the CFL is rigged, then what we're going to see is Hamilton win, because when Hamilton in 98, they went to the Grey Cup and lost. 1999, the Grey Cup's in B.C., they go there and they win it. The whole setup is perfectly in place. They
how
went there
how
like,
would that help Brayley
I'm going
if Hamilton won?
Yeah.
It's gonna, it's no, not, you guys say it's always set up. So Brayley's
okay,
team
right.
in B.C., it's going to be two Brayley
Get
teams in the Grey
John.
Cup.
No, it's the way it's going to benefit. It's got to benefit Hamilton. Hamilton's got the new stadium now. Bob Young paid lost so much money over the years.
So
they're no, but with Hamilton, it's a case where they've been. You know, Bob Young has been he's been taking a hit in the pocket for about 10 years, and now he's got the new stadium, the new TV deal. They're going to help him get the Grey Cup if it is set up, so that they can keep this momentum going forward and sell their stadium out for the next 5 years.
Nice try,
and then
if it's rigged, there's no way the Argos are going. First of all,
no,
for ratings, that's
it's
not going to help.
It's rigged. It's rigged because you guys say so, and I'll tell you why it's going to be Toronto, because it's rigged, okay?
No,
when MLSC buys it, the Grey Cup and the commish are going to want as much publicity and as much that he can get out of MLSC to let this thing run. So if it's rigged, it'll be the Argos in it,
okay.
definitely.
If
it
is
rigged, why
does
it have BC in it? Why do BC in
okay, okay. Can we talk about who's going to win because they deserve
oh my God.
To win?
Okay.
Can we talk about who's going to win because
right.
they deserve to win?
I hope.
We were doing so well. We were doing so
okay.
well there for a little while.
Who finishes first? I see Hamilton winning the East like by a close, like in 99.
There you go.
And that's more than possible. I agree with that. But I too do believe that this year, as every year, the team that goes in on a roll into the playoffs will win the opportunity to play in the Grey Cup, and then you know maybe embarrass themselves when they get there, like Hamilton did. It's all good. It's all good. I mean, you know.
The West is not any less, I should say,
you know, unpredictable, because I'm hearing people in this group and elsewhere talk about Saskatchewan not making the playoffs. I mean, that's not
they're going to make
that's
the playoffs.
That's not because Saskatchewan isn't going to make the playoffs. It's because of the same reason why people put Toronto down. Nobody likes the big town. That's all. Nobody likes Saskatchewan because they're the big dog.
Okay, I think we can all agree that we're saying Toronto's not going to the Grey Cup because we all know Hamilton and Montreal are better. That's why we're saying that. Saskatchewan,
absolutely. If you're suggesting that Montreal and Hamilton are better today, I'll give that to you. You can have that. But Manasse, I want to have a conversation the week before the Eastern Final, and then we'll talk about who's going to the Grey Cup.
Okay.
So that's
well,
that's where we
you
have,
know
we
what,
have
Frank,
to
Frank, I'm sure we will have that conversation.
I know we
oh,
will.
Yeah.
And we will have that conversation. This is all
you know,
BS
six
before
weeks,
that.
Ago.
Let's talk about the West now. Let's talk about the West. We did the East. How are the teams in the West? Is it cut and dry, or is it as muddled as it is in the East?
I think it's clear, right? Go ahead.
Let Christopher go first. He's in BC. It's where the Grey Cup's going to be. Let's have him. Is it as muddled as the East, or is it more cut and dry?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. I mean, I have my opinion of what's going to happen in this. BC, Calgary, Regina is going to fight with Edmonton for the last playoff position, and Winnipeg's going to be a couple more games up from what they were last year. And I know that that's going to be disagreed upon in this group itself by more than a few people. But that is my opinion, and that's the way that I think that it's falling out. BC's defense is going to absolutely destroy anybody on this field this year. And I have a couple of reasons why I want to say that. But, yeah, it's just the defense on the BC side is going to be impenetrable.
Okay, once we're done with this, Christopher, we'll talk about your big news coming out of BC. I anticipated it. Uh-huh. I'm waiting for it. But let's let it come after we discuss this point, right? And so now, Manasseh, here we are. We've talked about the East. Now the West. Is it as muddled and as confusing as the East is?
I think it's got the same sort of tier system like in the East, where BC and Saskatchewan are at the top. Calgary is going to be somewhere in the middle, and then Edmonton and Winnipeg can potentially challenge Calgary for that third spot. I think Calgary is going down hard. I think we're all going to be amazed by the end of the year how much that roster is a little bit overrated in certain spots. But Saskatchewan, I know you said before they look bad, but their defense is on point. I know, you know, Chris talks about BC's defense. Saskatchewan's defense is right there. Their defensive line is just probably the most talented in the league, and if you have a strong defensive line, that's the key to any good defense. And their secondary, still loaded. The only questions they have are at linebacker, you know, with the loss of Craig Butler, and, you know, they don't really have anyone at the middle. But
Manasseh,
I think Saskatchewan's right there, yep.
Manasseh, you like Crow?
I know you're saying that, but I mean, for my thing is, I'm not basing my opinion on just random stuff.
Remember last time I served you a nice plate of Crow? Remember that? And you
like
came
about
out
what?
And you messed up? Well,
about what?
I don't know, maybe five things, but prepare. Calgary's not going down, buddy.
I'm 100% confident. I'll put money on that one.
Okay,
that's a guarantee.
Okay, you guys can do the gambling thing later, Manasseh. Let John jumped in, so we'll let John go next. And then we got Mike, and then we got Kelly. So go ahead, John.
Well,
the West,
you know,
is it muddled?
I think we're doing a little deja vu here every show, reminiscing as to who we think is going to finish at the top. I'm just going to argue Manasseh's point. It's not going to be Calgary in the hole. I don't think so, okay? I just think if you have a running game in Cornish, you know, he can win half the season for them if need be, okay?
Yeah, their problem isn't the season, John. Their problem isn't the season. It's the playoffs for them.
Yeah, well, that's
true.
Know
they'll get in the playoffs.
So he said they're not even going to make the playoffs. I'm going to argue that.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying, you know, John, you're right. They do well in the season. You know, there's nothing that says that they can't play well during the season. There's nothing that says that you're 100% right. John Cornish is one of the best running backs during the regular season. He just hasn't shown us in the playoffs.
I think it's going to be, again, BC and Calgary battling it out. And I think Saskatchewan's going to have a tough year this year. I really do. It's hard coming down the running game unless they can get a replacement. It's just not going to gel like it did. The hype, the excitement of the you know, all that stuff is there every single year.
Hangover?
I just think that big key player is gone. We got that other, you know, Cackard re-signed with us, you know, and he left. And that's a little bit of a drain there. So
what about their defense, though, John?
You know what? In the CFL, I kid you not, the defenses change every 3 months depending on who gets let go in what camp in the NFL. Okay, so I'm going to just run my money on what the CFL is, and the CFL is offense, all right? I'm not going to put my worry into not having the players, especially on the Argos right now in defense. I see this every year, guys, for the last 32 years, every year, okay? Every 3 months, and even every 2 months, the players change on defense just because of all the
even offense,
down
John,
south.
Even offense. The CFL
even offense,
team.
But offense
maybe,
is where
maybe
we
on the Argos.
Yeah, but
I don't
offense
see
is
that
where
happening
we settle.
Out west.
John, you're mixing it up because, I mean, out west, you look at the BC Lions, they've had most of the same defensive personnel for like 6 years. You know, Calgary, the same thing. I mean, the West has way more stability than the East.
If it's working, why would you change it? I'm talking about the teams where it's not working, and then they end up changing it up. Look at Hamilton last year. How many player changes did they have? I mean, in Toronto, too, it's going to be like that every year. Okay, that's just the way it plays out. In BC, where they have a good defense, why would you touch it? You know,
exactly.
So John, who's the number one in your mind?
Winnipeg.
John, who's your favorite? Who's your favorite to finish first in the West? Give us the order of the we're digressing here. Come out with who you said. Obviously, Saskatchewan, you're holding them a little higher than by some others. So what? They're first, second?
Calgary,
you have.
I think
Calgary
again. Calgary, BC tied even for first. If I'm going to go that
far, there you
far,
go. Okay,
right? That's
wow.
Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, you know. Listen,
okay.
Vanessa, you'll see.
I'm putting the crow in the oven right now for you, John. Don't worry
BC
about that.
BC has. Right. Okay, fine.
It's going to burn.
Crow, right? Okay,
it's
sure.
It's going to burn
because
it's going to spend a lot of time in the oven.
Exactly.
Right. BC, naturally, each team who is hosting the Grey Cup has that added pressure, but also has that added excitement. We're not talking about coaches and player personnel who have not known what to do. They just had it there a few years ago. Okay.
Right. No, I agree. BC's the number one in the West. My only issue is Calgary at number two. I find that.
Yeah,
you're
going to
put Calgary ahead of Saskatchewan?
Yeah, I do. And that Calgary's going to win a big
John
loss.
Is.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, Edmonton, I think, you know, I think Edmonton, I just want Winnipeg's going to be last. Edmonton's going to be
okay,
probably
fourth. Does Edmonton have a chance, John? Does Edmonton have a chance to make the playoffs?
No.
I say yes.
You know why? Player-wise, they probably could. But just because of Jones, I'm sorry. This guy's got a cancer for that team. Watch.
Well, that's a bias.
Yeah, that is a bias statement a little bit.
All right.
And that's part of being a CFL fan.
When these guys spend some time on the field and see how he coaches and how he talks and his mannerism, and then you kind of put the just together when you hear stories in the paper, and you go, oh, okay, I can see that
we'll
happening.
We'll see if
John,
these guys...
John, I am not disputing that he did not work
saying,
in Toronto.
John's
he did
just
not work
saying
in Toronto. That's a fact.
Chip on his shoulder.
Well,
I don't know. Wasn't it Jones that won you the 2012 Grey Cup? I mean, it was the defense that won the game, not the offense. So I don't see why you're... Whoa.
I don't know what game you were watching, but I think...
I watched Toronto's defense shut down John Cornish, and they stopped Kevin Glenn, who the week before put up almost 400 yards on the BC line.
I know, but I saw Kevin Glenn drop the ball on a snap. So, you know, he wasn't exactly that sharp. I believe that the offense, the combination of the two was, you know, I think the Argos won because nobody believed they had an offense.
Hey, no, their offense
was
terrible in the first half.
The defense looked good,
Amen.
I said the defense looked good because the offense spent a lot of time on the field.
Exactly.
No, they did. In the first half, Ricky Ray threw an interception on the first possession. You guys had like 5-2 and outs to start the game.
We're digressing.
I remember.
We're digressing out of
this. Okay, yeah, we are. We're Christopher,
Frank,
you're right.
Move on, Kelly.
Oh, okay, so hang on a second. So then, John, just to finish John off, so Winnipeg has no chance of making playoffs. Edmonton is on the outside, on the perimeter, with a great opportunity maybe to do it or not. We'll see. Kelly, you know, those five teams in that division, muddled mess or tier system, or is it total confusion, or it's all set in stone?
You know, I could say a lot of things to rebut a lot of things that were said, but I'm not going to waste time on that. Frank, you know, I tend to agree with you that, you know, you can catch lightning in a bottle in the CFL, so... You know, this is all just preseason, you know, speculation and stuff like that. I'll tell you in June who I really believe will be having.
And then we'll change our mind in August.
Yeah, for sure.
No, it's September.
We can go throughout the season,
Give us where it stands right
exactly.
now. Who are the top dogs in the West?
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, here's my list. It's BC, it's Saskatchewan, it's Calgary, it's Winnipeg, it's Edmonton.
Now,
nailed it.
Is Edmonton completely out of the picture in your mind?
Yes.
They are, and the factor
that's
for me
fine.
Is
that's fine. That's just an opinion. You don't have to justify it with me. Edmonton and Winnipeg, are they close to making the playoffs in your mind? Because I'm trying to make a point here and trying to be a host here to give people some insight into what you guys are thinking. And sometimes we muddle it with all this, you know, constant bickering. So basically they have an outside. Winnipeg's your team in the West that has an outside chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And as far as guarantee for playoffs, you pretty much are saying those first two teams, with the third team having a bit of problem, you were saying Saskatchewan and BC as being pretty much in the playoffs in your mind, and the one in danger, as much as Winnipeg could make it in, you know, reverse, you know, mirror image,
Calgary.
Would be Calgary, right?
Yep,
and
absolutely.
And why is that? Why in your mind is Calgary?
No, number one, they didn't really lose a whole lot of pieces, but let me tell you where they did lose big time. It's Dmitry Zubas, guys. He retired.
Yes,
I mean,
captain,
this is
leader.
Mr. All-Canadian. He's basically the best man at his position in the league today. And, you know, I mean, no offense, Xavier Fulton or, you know, any of these guys who play tackle, but, you know, this guy's a beast. And you know, they're going to miss him off that edge. Cornish is going to miss him. But,
a lot.
You know, on the other hand, I'm kind of playing a hunch. And I think Huffer's tired. I think he's done. And, you
he
know,
needs
with
a change.
That said,
I agree.
Yeah, you know, I think he's tired. And I just saw it in his face toward the end of last season and culminated by the loss to the Riders in the playoffs. And, you know, Calgary's, I mean, you know what, dude? They're turning it up with the fans. Fans are saying, you know, like, Grey Cup or bust. Well, I think they're going to be disappointed, boys.
Huh, that's a bust all the way.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, Mike.
So we're 2-2 here.
Mike Townsend, West.
Well, the way I feel about the West right now, it's going to be Saskatchewan 1, BC 2, Calgary 3, Edmonton and Winnipeg 4 and 5. And the reason I'm not putting BC up at the top spot right now is because last year BC got exposed a lot on their defense. They were getting the long bombs were getting thrown against them.
They were being called old.
They were being called old. They were getting all the pass interference penalties, especially J. Allen Rose. He was grabbing and holding. I mean, Durant exposed them boys with the long ball. And if they got the same defensive people out there again, they're just going to get exposed again. And if Lule go down, that's it, man. That's it.
No, they got Giles.
Uh-oh.
Who?
They got Giles.
Who?
It's not June yet.
Who?
They got Giles. They got Giles. The guy that Edmonton got for Ray.
Anyways, if Lule goes down, they don't have no viable backup to come in and play, and this be over for BC because he's still got a question mark on his shoulder. You don't know how healthy this guy is going to be. And
yeah,
then with Saskatchewan.
Given, and again, that doesn't get answered till he, you know. But then again, Edmonton thought they had the answer with Nichols, and then he went down in the first exhibition game. So yeah, there's quarterbacks are fragile.
And see, with my thing with Saskatchewan, I mean, they won a Grey Cup, so them that's the beast you got to dethrone. And, you know, they lost a couple of pieces. You know, the only thing they need to add is a good running back. But as far as losing Dressler, I mean, they picked up an upgrade when they got Chaz Schilling, man. So, I mean, come on, man. They're not going to lose a step.
They have the Saskatchewan. Okay. All right. And so do you see Winnipeg or Edmonton challenging Calgary for the playoff spot at all? Do you see them, you know, sniffing at the playoffs?
I see more of Winnipeg more than Edmonton right now.
Yes.
Because I believe Winnipeg, you know, they're putting little pieces together. I believe O'Shea going to do his thing as far as coaching this year. But Calgary, I agree with Nasi, man. Them boys is done.
Done like dinner.
Sure
is. All right. Who did I miss other than me? That's it.
You.
Just me. Okay. In the West, I clearly, I have to say that I have all the faith in the
Oilers.
Huh?
No, I'm sorry. I was watching the playoff game. My bad.
Saskatchewan is hard to bet against, and they were deep last year, and they're not as deep this year. But they're not deep in one position, as far as I'm concerned. You know, as far as receiving is concerned, their bread and butter is their quarterback, Darian Durant, who isn't your prototypical flashy all-star. He just gets the job done. That's all, and he has the players in the front line to help him get it. Are they in trouble without a – are they a better team with a better running back? Of course. But they're still an elite team even if they have an ordinary running back. As long as that running back can block, they're going to churn up a lot of yards. They're going to make a lot of receptions. And I've had taken the time to pay attention to some of the players that Kelly has brought to my attention. And, my goodness, I mean, you know, how many times does a team have to come up with a great receiver? I mean, between Montreal and Saskatchewan, young receivers, I'm looking forward to that. I picked Saskatchewan basically to nudge out BC once again for the first time. They're going to come in with the challenge of what they haven't done, and that is finish first. And I think they will finish first ahead of BC. And I think Calgary isn't. I agree with the Calgary theory that Huffnagel's tired. I also agree or will say that the Calgary team is a little burnt out from, you know, close but not quite, no cigar, you know. And I happen to think that I agree with John that Chris Jones is a bit of a tough guy, a guy, I wouldn't call him what John called him, but I will say he's a do-it-my-way or the highway kind of guy. And I'm not sure that after a season of that kind of attitude, whether the guys will go to war for him. And unfortunately, that's the problem Edmonton has had all along, that they have guys leading them that you won't go to war. I mean, will the offensive line go to war for their GM? I don't think so. I think Winnipeg will finish ahead of Edmonton. And, John, you know how much I adore Edmonton and how much I've supported Edmonton, but I happen to think that Winnipeg has made some really smart moves, and I think they will challenge Calgary for a playoff spot. Will there be a crossover? Maybe even that, because unfortunately never. Here in the East, we're going to be, you know, this is a year in the CFL for me. I hate to sound like a shameless promoter of the CFL, but gol darn it, it is hard to put your finger on any team that's gonna like, how many years has it been since we haven't been able to say that team is going to dominate? Even last year, come on, whether you admit it or not, Saskatchewan, just by what they did in the offseason, we all knew that they were the team to beat. And anybody who wouldn't admit that was just lying to themselves. But this year, is there really a team, one team that has to be beaten? I think there's a 1A, 1B, 1C all over the place in the CFL, and it's going to make it interesting for us.
Yeah,
What's really interesting here, John and myself agreed right across the board. Manasse and Kelly agreed right across the board. And Mike and Frank agreed right across the board.
Wow.
On all of our picks.
Wow.
John.
You're welcome, Mike.
I'm with you, bro.
But I think we can all agree that the cap system has done a great job creating parity in the CFL, like more than, I think.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And instant parity with bringing in their expansion team. I mean, come on. What other league can actually claim that the other teams are unselfish enough to say, let's bring in a team that will be competitive with us and have the foresight to see how great it'll be for the Ottawa fans who don't have to sit. And unfortunately, guys, at the end of the year, it may not seem as good an idea to the Ottawa fans because, you know, as much as I'm saying what I'm saying now, it's creating a lot of, I think, a little too much confidence for the Ottawa fans. And they're being built up for a big disappointment because if they lose and they were supposed to lose is one thing. If they lose and they thought they had a chance to win, you know, it might be exciting, but it also could be very disappointing. So, you know, Ottawa could go either way. They're very cocky right now. They are. They are. They're almost Saskatchewan, too.
But would any of you guys be shocked if they ended up, you know, being competitive in the playoffs and God knows if they made it to the Grey Cup? Like, I could see that still happening.
Manasse, I already said that they could make it to the Grey Cup.
They just have to come in third.
But imagine, they're exactly in the same position Hamilton was last year. They had a real good quarterback, but, you know, the defense was questionable. And you know, I mean, we're starting from zero, so it's not exact. What I'm saying isn't totally true, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
I think even now, like, their defense is ahead of where Hamilton was at the beginning of last year. Like, if you look at their roster, the guys that got, like, Keith Schulligan, they brought in Anton McKenzie, Javon Johnson, Eric Frazier at safety. I like the guys they got. And Rick Campbell, I think, is a good defensive coach.
Oh, my goodness.
And
he's great.
Like, like Christopher has always said, if you have a quarterback in the CFL, if you have a proven guy that you can count on in the clutch or in the playoffs – they got a chance, and I'm so happy that they've already sold 15,000 season tickets, and they've already almost sold out the home opener, and that's great for the CFL because we all know we can't afford to see Ottawa fold again.
No, they're a great representative. They represent what the CFL is. The CFL is the best football in the world. You like that, Mike? You like how I threw that in there?
Well, I gotta ask you all one question before we go. Like, are you guys paying attention at all to the NBA playoffs, or are you guys getting behind the Raptors?
Well, we started. That's where we started. Serge has made it clear that the Raptors are winning the championship.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, you can hold me to that. Not
Serge. The only reason Serge is here is because the Raptors and the Canadiens aren't playing tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So are you guys gonna watch the game tomorrow night?
I'm psyched.
I was blown away by the fan support, man. I couldn't believe it. It looked like the same as the Maple Leafs last year. Like, you had 10,000 people outside the arena at Maple Leaf Garden, and that's unreal, man.
No, all the bars were hooked up to it. No, we're psyched up about the Raptors here, man. We have a good fan base here,
He doesn't appreciate the sheer size of this city. It's not just a city. Toronto's is identical to New York. All the talk is always New York City, but New York is bigger than just the city. It is in a giant community. You know, the other boroughs are amazingly large, and Toronto's the same. We have boroughs that stretch to Buffalo, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Boroughs bigger than Regina.
What's the total population if you include the whole metropolitan?
20-some-odd million. 20-some-odd
million.
Whoa. 22 million.
Okay, those are the legal ones. And then we're talking about maybe 2.5
Okay, John,
illegal.
Let's not talk about the other 100 million, okay?
But is Hamilton a suburb of Toronto, or is Hamilton its own city?
It's not a suburb of Toronto, but the point
city.
I'm trying to make with you, Manasseh, when you drive from Niagara Falls, beside Buffalo, okay?
Yeah.
It's like going through New York City. You just keep going. It's like going from New Jersey to New York City. It's population all the way through. Everything's interconnected. There's no stop in population. It just continues. We're spread out along above Lake Ontario, between Buffalo and a place called Oshawa, okay? There's a town called Oshawa, if you look on the map. There, you go on the QEW or the 401. It's constant population. And there's 20 in that line above Lake Ontario. There's 20 some odd million people who are diehard sports fans who deserve more than one hockey team. But because of the bigots in the National Hockey League, they don't get another. We don't get another team here. It is huge. And basketball. I heard, I don't know if this is true, but they're saying that the attention the Raptors are getting is competing with the top three or four in the NBA.
Yeah, I heard like the ratings across Canada on TSN are like, they're record-setting. They've never had this many people tune in to watch the Raptors play in the history of the team.
And we're becoming like Montreal. You know what Montreal is, and Serge is here, and I want to say this in front of Serge. Serge, I think, alluded to it a little bit, and my awareness of Montreal. Montreal is a big special occasion place. They love one-offs. They just love one-offs. Isn't that right, Serge?
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
Like, we drew, close to 100,000 for two games, but the two games together was like a, two-game one-off for the baseball preseason for the Jays. But, next year could be half that, so we don't know. But, you're right.
There's a difference between Air Canada Arena with a Leaf game, which is old season ticket holders, okay, tradition, and down in the Silver Bowl. With the Raptors, okay, it was the rich kids, or the basketball fan guys, like the one super fan guy who's got his dealership and whatever. He's the front row guy. He's He's everywhere plastered in newspapers. People like him who do make noise and had money bought the, you know, the good seats. So when there's a playoff game, they're on their feet. Not like at a Maple Leaf game, only the upper bowl is making noise.
They're there because they want to be there and they paid to be there as opposed
to
they were given a gift and now they're, you know.
$1,800 a seat. Playoff game, huh? Yeah.
What? Was that for the Leafs or the Raptors?
Floor seat.
Wow. $1,800.
Dang.
$1,800 a ticket.
They're notoriously one of the most expensive basketball clubs to attend in the NBA, though. Like, the Raptors have never been shy about asking for a chunk of change for a ticket.
That's still nothing compared to the Lakers. I remember in 2004, the Timberwolves were playing the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, and we had Laker fans coming over and buying front row seats. They were selling it to them for $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's basketball for you. You know, that's
yeah.
big city. That's big city. But don't forget, the L.A. Yeah. Lakers are not the only team in California. You know?
Yep.
In Toronto, it's just the Raptors.
And just to mention, if anyone's ever heard of the National Basketball League of Canada, which exists for 2 to 3 years.
Manasse, you know.
Hang on, John. John.
Don't think nobody was
Serge
asking
finish.
$10,000 for those seats
on
Saturday.
Serge, go ahead. The National Basketball League.
Yeah, it's an all-Canadian. It's like a CFL, but it's all Canadian League basketball teams. And they got four teams in the Maritimes and four in Ontario. So the final just got played. Windsor played PEI. Windsor won the 2 years in a row was London Lightning. So there's that little sub-league now working pretty well, too, in terms of basketball in Canada, an all-Canadian league.
Well, are you guys new to your TVs by any chance?
Yeah, Memphis, come on. You got to make
it. Are you guys watching this Memphis OKC game? This is crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's a good game. 1 point difference. He missed it. Man.
Okay, he made a second free throw. OKC's down by two with 12 seconds, and they're bringing the ball up to court. Is this on TSN right now, or are you guys watching this in Canada?
TNT.
TNT. Oh, Russell Westbrook for three.
No!
They got the tip back. Oh, my God. Wow.
Oh, they tied it up.
It's gone overtime. Yep. Kendrick Perkins, the worst player on the team. Oh, that's crazy.
Let's go back
to football. If you want to tune into the basketball game, please feel free to tune into the basketball game.
Can I say one thing about Ottawa, Frank?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say something about Ottawa before we're completely off them. I just wanted to say that, I think the most important thing that they can do this year is really just send a message to the fans and to, the management as far as just basically building an organization and worry about, winning some key games as well as winning within the division. Focus on those two things as far as game planning and injuries and, the decisions you make as far as the 9-game are concerned and everything like that. And then just work on, partying and setting that kind of atmosphere.
Atmosphere.
And building that brand even further. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but they got a Grey Cup. They're hosting a Grey Cup, right?
No, not yet.
Well, they're in line. Yeah, but before 2020, they're going to be.
Oh, absolutely.
So they got a promise to their fans today that they're an expansion team. They got to put it out there for their fans and say we're an expansion team. We're going to win the Grey Cup at home.
I'd like to modify what you're saying just a little bit. I think the fans will appreciate is a team that's competitive and that each time they go onto the field, the fans will be entertained to the point where their team has a chance to win. And that's all fans want from all their teams. It doesn't matter whether you win or whether you lose. As long as you compete when you're on the field, it's more important when you're a new team than it is when you're, a team with a reputation. Like right now, I'm scared to death that our Argo team, we're going to have to suffer through a lousy year. Well, it's okay to do that. We won the Grey Cup in 2012. It's going to be more imperative for Ottawa to play well and show that they can be competitive and be, you know, something to be proud of in Ottawa, especially early on. You know, that's why I'm worried about this little overexcitement and this even I'm getting caught up in this wonderful thing that they've got this great team and I might be blowing them up a little bigger than I should be. And that disappointment could be more divisive than, you know, successive, if you will. So, yeah, so that's, yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you, Kelly. I know what you're trying to say, too. Like, I'm reading between your lines as well.
For sure.
And it's all about the game, the experience, the entertainment. And I think Ottawa can do it because they have the experienced leaders and owners that know how to do that kind of stuff. You know, they're not owners that are just one. They're not just new to being owners of a sports franchise. They're not new.
One thing you notice about the players they took, these guys could be put in the category of playmaker. A lot of the names you've mentioned in Frazier, Scholl,
and character,
character guys. You said having a great night at the park means winning. Well, you know, give me a nail biter every time. I mean, you know, like, I want to see great football games that come down to the wire, whether we win or lose. That's still entertaining.
Yeah, and you want to be part of a league that is competitive so that when a team comes in, depending on the day, depending on the circumstances, either team could win. There's nothing wrong with
I like the cockiness of Ottawa, man. I think Harry Burris brought some swag to that team.
He sure
did.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, once he showed up, you could tell they got excited.
Yes, they did.
For sure.
You know, and that's not Glenn's fault that he wasn't that guy, because that swagger wasn't there when he arrived. Now, there was confidence, but not that swagger.
Mm-mm. Yep.
And that doesn't say anything bad about Glenn's, capabilities. Nobody's putting him down for... But there is a cachet with Burris. He just came from a Grey Cup. You know, it's not, you know, it's about where he's been. You know,
No, go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry.
No, I apologize. I'm going on. So go ahead.
No, I was just saying with Burris shows on the field. I mean, he talks a little crap. He gets excitement. Kevin Glenn is like a blue collar player, comes to work, show no emotions, wins the game. And then, you know, going out his merry way. I mean, it's two different players. They're both good players, but they was excited when they signed Glenn. But when Burris showed up, that's where you see the swag and the confidence. Them boys ready to play. They looking like, hey, just because we're an expansion team, y'all not going to run over us.
Well, let's be honest. The big thing is, when you have a quarterback who was a backup somewhere else and he comes to an expansion team and that guy's standard, we can do this, guys. We can do this. No offense, but who really cares? You haven't done anything. What are you telling us to do? Now you're bringing a guy in who's been to the Grey Cup as recently as last year, and he's saying, we can do this. And you're looking at him going, well, he should know because he just did it. And that's all there is. Like, What you've done yesterday means a lot to teams that are playing with you tomorrow and players, right? And the fans, of course, they're excited. I mean, imagine, he had that Ticat uniform in Saskatchewan, playing Saskatchewan in the Grey Cup, and now they see him in their uniform. And they know that that guy is not a throwaway quarterback. And if they're really smart, they know the only reason they got him is because they were willing to pay him and Hamilton wasn't.
Right.
Yep.
And if I could add, too, like, their schedule really plays in their favor. If you look at their opening, they open with a bye in week one. Week two, they play at Winnipeg. Week three, they're at Edmonton. Then they host Toronto in the home opener. I could see them going 3-0 to start off the season. And if they can get that with that type of momentum and the excitement they'll have at home, who knows what could happen.
Mm-hmm. The East is a toss-up. That's why I was saying that they're pretty much everybody has a shot at first, depending on what happens and how things, a break here or there, an injury here or there, or a signing here or there in the Eastern Division is far more impactful than it is in the West, because there's as much as you guys wanted to portray the East as having these gaps, I just don't think they do. There's a lot of question marks in the East, enough so that it doesn't guarantee it. There's a lot riding on the quarterback in Hamilton, guys. Come on. There's a lot riding on that quarterback
He's going to deliver. I really don't
understand
the doubts that you guys have.
I understand your belief that he can do that, and I understand that I have a lot of admiration for him as a quarterback. But it's about getting it done. And when I'm thinking over how things are working out, there's no guarantee that he can do it. There's no guarantee that he can do it.
Yeah, my faith in his abilities is less than him. It's more on Ken Austin's ability as a coach. And I think Ken Austin's the right guy to get the most out of him.
And I feel that in Toronto we have a better quarterback, and we have an offensive coordinator of equal value in Milanovic. Milanovic might not be as seasoned as Austin, as persistent and or demanding as Austin, but he does have credentials. And in Ottawa, they have, just like Toronto, they have a quarterback that knows what he's doing. I like their offensive coach, which means I have an admiration for their offensive plan. And their defense, they'll probably have the best defense in the East by the time the season's over.
Yeah, just with Toronto, it's just, you look at them, they have a quarterback, they have an injured running back, and they have a good receiving core. Their offensive line is questionable, their defense is questionable. You look around the East, Ottawa, Hamilton, and Montreal, the one thing they all have going for them is they have good defenses and good defensive coaches, and that's what sets
them
apart.
I can't argue that point, but what I will say is that I happen to think that Tim Burke is in his element when it comes to defense. And I happen to think that not because he's the Argo defensive coordinator, but because of his credentials, in my opinion, he has a history of being top-notch and top-drawer as far as defensive coaches is concerned. And I guarantee you, even if they don't change the players the Argos have, and they just add players that aren't that don't have the cachet, don't have the cachet of some of the ones that we've seen join teams, he's going to be able to create an atmosphere that will be far superior to the one that they had left last year. So I happen to believe that their defense will be improved. And if their offense, if their running back, if they can solve that problem, just like Saskatchewan, Toronto will be in there nip and tuck with those other three teams. I don't see him being a bad defensive coach. I think it's a pick 'em for all the defensive coordinators in the CFL.
Well, I mean, it's just roster-wise. I mean, of course they're going to improve. When you're the worst defense in the league the last 2 years, improvement may not, even if,
We're not arguing about how much they'll improve. I get it. We're not arguing about whether they'll improve or not. We're just disagreeing on how much they'll improve. And like I said, I think Burke has the credentials to be a good defensive coordinator. And I happen to have faith in the Argonauts. So Jim Barker right now is, I don't know, maybe he's sitting on his hands or his ass is cold or his hands are cold and needs to keep them warm. But, he's going to make moves eventually. I've tried to get in touch with them. They're keeping their lives, they're too busy to talk to us, to me, to the show. And I get that. But I'd love to talk to them and say, well, you got any plans? Share them with us, would you? Because, I get the feeling there is no plan. And there isn't a plan in my mind. But I have faith.
You know what, Frank? I think they're waiting to see all these signings in the NFL to see who's going to get signed and who's not, bring some guy in and evaluate him and work him out. I think that's what they're going to do.
So in other words, he's got a plan. He's not sharing it with anybody, and he already has his lineup in his head who he wants to bring in. He has a few guys in each position or each slot that he's waiting to see which one's open, so which one he gets, and he's holding out for the last minute, which you're saying is what I'm saying and what I've said at the beginning of all this conversation. The Argos are going to come out of the gate slow, and then they will pick up steam. And that's what's going to happen with Ottawa, and that's what's going to happen with Montreal. And I agree with you, Manasse, that if the quarterback and the quarterback's coach in Hamilton is as good as you say, they will get the fastest start, but I assure you the gap will get closed as the season moves on. On all fronts, I believe. Because those other three teams are in the same boat, established players. They have an established defense in Montreal, but their offense isn't established. It's very credible. Great receivers.
Yeah, the one thing Toronto has going for them in their schedule is week 16 and week 18. They host Hamilton twice in 3 weeks. So that's kind of crazy how the schedule played out for the Argos. But if they're at least within a shot, that'll be their opportunity to close the gap and maybe get themselves back in the race.
And play them when they're in a better position to play them. Point taken.
Right.
But that's why I can't wait I really can't wait. My favorite games in the East are going to be any game, almost any game in the East. But it's different for me in the West. The games that I look forward to are the Saskatchewan-Winnipeg games, the Edmonton BC games. Those are the games that I want to see. Those are the games that are going to tell the story, guys. In my opinion, that's what's going to tell the story of how the teams shake out. In my opinion, that's all.
You said it, man. I believe that because I was going to, you know, kind of chime in and say, for Winnipeg, a lot rides on the three games that they play against the Riders this year, and they got two of those at home. So, you know,
if they can shake out three wins,
that's the tone. I mean, but the other thing I can't wait for, Frank, as long as we're on that topic, can't wait for, let's say a week or two maybe after that Labor Day game when the first of our CFL, NFL cuts and or returnees are in the lineup, you know, like we might acquire them around Labor Day, but maybe they don't work their way into the lineup. So maybe that week 12, week 13, oh boy, that's going to be fun to watch.
Isn't that the biggest impact on having a big finish in the CFL? And that's what makes the CFL different than a lot of leagues. You don't have to convince another team to give you a player, to separate themselves from a player for your benefit. It's a complete outside, you know, it's literally a free agent that comes in. You know, it's totally free. You know, there's no cost. All there is a, you know, an open position. That's what makes the CFL so wonderful. It really does.
Love it. Love it.
And the thing is with Corey Sheets. The thing with Corey Sheets is, don't worry, man. He's going to be back because the Raiders, they re-signed what's the guy they had, McFadden, and then they just signed Maurice Jones-Drew, man. And they signed him to a 3-year deal. I like Corey Sheets, but he's not going to get no playing time in front of them two guys, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Oh, that's great. That's great news for Kelly and all the Rider Nation, man. You guys are going to get your guy back by Labor Day.
Well, not only that, but the second, let's say, depth chart guy at is actually the young guy, and I put him ahead of McFadden this year, who will likely drop down to third string back below MJD and the young guy. I can't remember what his name is. Don't want to insult him by taking a stab at it. But if anybody knows that, if anybody knows that name, I mean, I watched a couple Raider games last year and, you know, he was involved and he looked like a bright spot, but he was just so young and inexperienced kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, man. Just so don't worry. Corey Sheets will be back. Now, the thing about it is Saskatchewan going to have the funds to sign Sheets?
That's easy. All they got to do is cut G-Roy. That's it. There's $180,000 off the cap. And if they need to, maybe one other minimum contract, bam, you got $200K. You give Sheets $200K, you make him the top-paid player at running back, and you're good to go.
You don't have to cut D-Roy, though. Listen to this, guys. Hypothetically, we have $350,000 off the cap with all the guys that have left. So, you know, we've got a lot of money to play around with. We didn't get crazy with free agents yet. I mean, there's a lot of money in the bank right now as far as salary cap is concerned. And, you know, I'm saying $350,000. I believe it's more like $450,000, like... that we have.
But you got to factor in that Durant's new extension. He went from 250 to about 400K. So there's a chunk of your change right there.
I do factor that in, but you know, there's always guys like that, but we also lost the contract of Willie, which was, you know, said to be 125, 130, you know, in the neighborhood.
And Keith Schulligan, I think he had 180, right?
180, man.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, we lost significant amounts of salary just on the guys that we lost to free agency. And you know, even a guy like Abraham Kroma, who was on the practice roster and off it kind of thing. And you know, like another guy who was kind of on and off it that we still have is Morty Ivy. And, you know, these guys are making, you know, not the league minimum. They're making 75, 80 Chroma saw a lot of action in 2011 before he got injured. So
Kelly, let me ask you, is Brian Peters, is he going to see any starting time at linebacker?
You know, it's wide open at that spot, and we need a Canadian, you know, that much.
Right,
right,
that's why I was, yeah, I thought he'd be the answer at linebacker for him.
Yeah, like he is, you know, like the guy I just mentioned, Morty Ivey, I mean, it'd be great if we could just insert him, but like I said, we need a Canadian. I mean, unless you're going to start Waldo on the, you know.
Yeah, at the weak side linebacker.
You know what I mean?
Okay, guys, we're under a minute. I just wanted to get this in because poor John's sitting there saying nothing. He must be eating or something. But you were talking about all the talent that has gone, you know, to the NFL. I don't think there's a team that's lost more talent, that had more talent that went to the NFL than the Toronto Argonauts. So if any guys come back, I think we got a pretty good roster that could come back and join us, right, John?
Yep.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
Anyway, yeah, thanks for tuning
Kelly
in, guys.
Talk. What are you
guys,
talking about?
You.
I'm Look, eating something.
The show's over. That's it. The show. No.
All right. Good night, folks.
It's Friday night. It's Monday night.
Next Friday.
Next Friday, yeah. Oh, by the way, Friday we get another player to be interviewed.
Yeah.
Great story. I put up his name. You guys, if you have time.
You got Chad Johnson coming in?
No, we ain't got no Chad Johnson.
Okay.
We're every so often here. We're bringing in Canadian players who are up for the draft. Some real credible players, and this week we have a kid named on Friday, Ray Hartman, and. He played for Saint FX. He had to leave for 2 years. He put off the draft for 2 years for personal reasons. We'll get into him when we talk to him. Anybody that knows the Shania Twain story knows his story. It's all about family comes first. And we'll be interviewing him, and he's up for the draft. And he went into the combine the hard way. He had to make it to a regional, made it to the regional, and won an opportunity to go to the Canadian regionals here in Toronto, as you are all aware. And he showed well, and he looks like a top draft pick. We'll be talking to him and his history and what he's all about on Friday. And, you know, we have a lot of great football to talk in the future. Go a few extra minutes, guys. I'll give you each a chance, and I'll start with John because he's always in a hurry to go because he has to wake up early in the morning. John, if you were to rate this CFL season, regardless of how your team's doing, I mean, just as a CFL season for anticipation, in the last 10 years, where would it fit in your mind, or even in the last 20?
And from a scale to 1 to 10, I would say a 9, a definite
there you go.
9. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the expansion, the new stadium that are popping up everywhere, that alone in itself, and they're close by. You know, we can actually visit these stadiums that are popping up. But it's that balance that we have right now, and it's exciting, you know, exciting. Looking forward to it. Scale of 1 to 10, definitely a 9. I'm psyched.
Obviously,
and on that
a 10
note,
card for you to give. Kelly, you're next.
Pardon me, guys. I just took a bite of something, but I'm going to say I'm at about an 8.
What years were better for you? Last year?
Well, last year was definitely a big year for anticipation.
That's understandable. It's understandable from your perspective.
And actually, 95 was a huge year for expectations, and you know, honorable mention to 97.
Okay, but still, an 8 is pretty good for this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering who the heck is 514. All of a sudden, I've lost who 514 is.
Oh, it's me.
Oh, it's you?
Yeah,
of course, Serge. Jeez. How about you? This year, looking back, 1 to 10 over the past few years, anticipation?
I got a season ticket from every team this year. So I have big expectations that this year is going to be the biggest year the CFL has ever seen. So you can quote me on that. So there you go.
You have season tickets for every team?
One season. Two for the Owls and one for every team. The cheapest.
Wow.
One. I got a ticket for every game this year because something big is going to happen here. And you'll see come Vancouver.
You got a lot of
free
time.
I changed my plane ticket because of the venue in Montreal, so I'm going to fly in on the 30th. But, this year. So I give it a 13 out of 10. There you go.
Oh, wow.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Well, you put up. You don't have to shut up because you're putting up, too. Perfect. How about you, Christopher, out there on the West Coast? What are you, on the barbecue?
Feeding the horses.
You're feeding the horse. Okay, we'll move on to Mike.
I'm here. Is that?
Oh.
Is Mike not working? Or is it working better?
Your
now
mic?
It's working.
It's working now.
It's good.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I guess it wasn't
okay.
Working because I was talking. You guys weren't listening. So
okay,
you weren't hearing.
Well, now we're all listening.
Anticipation-wise, it's. I'm not going to say it's a 10 because it's not like jumping out of the door, but there hasn't been a season that has had as much anticipation as this in a long time for me, anyhow. We got a Grey Cup at home. I got a rocking team. The league is expanding. We got new stadiums. We got new friends. We got the CFL is group. The banter that's going back and forth. The anticipation for this year is huge. I think we're all chomping at the bit. We all need to get going. The tempers are there, and we need some football.
Absolutely.
Football season starts. Everything's going to settle down. We're all going to play, watch the games. We're all going to enjoy it. We're all going to bark at each other, but we're all going to have fun. We need the season
talking
to
football.
Start. It's time. It's
talking
time.
Football.
There's too much going around and around and around in a circle and not enough going forward.
Okay. Mike, your turn. Mr. Townsend.
I rated like Kelly. I rated about a 9 myself because looking at our expansion team, looking at the different players that's coming to the CFL and a lot of players going to different leagues, man, it's going to be a good year. And I say it again, I came in from Montreal to play BC.
There you go. And finally, Manasseh?
Yeah, I got to give it a 1,000, man. For me, everything from the fact that, you know, like, and it's on every level, too, because if you're someone like myself who watches all the game on TV, I love the fact that TSN is ramping up all their presentation and the game's going to have a lot more, you know, a lot more enjoyable to view. And from everything I read, all the fans are going to enjoy better experiences at the stadium, whether it's Montreal, they're talking about new things, Calgary's upgrading their stadium, all the new stadiums in Hamilton and Ottawa, and obviously, you know, our new expansion team. But the biggest thing of it all is the competition. And the first time since the early 80s, the whole East is competitive. You know, when I came in the CFL in 2010, it was Montreal and then a bunch of jokes after that. And now, for the first time, all the Eastern squads are competitive, and that's huge. So I love the competition,
yep.
And I'm excited.
Yep. Great. Great opinions. I don't know that 1 out of 10 is 1,000, but that's okay. I don't know if 1 out of 10 is 13, but I guess you and Serge went to the same math class, Manasseh.
Yes, sir.
Okay, my turn. I would give it a 9 any other year, but this year I'm giving it a 10, and this is the reason why I go from 9 to 10. All of the reasons you guys gave as far as the stadiums are concerned and all that kind of stuff, and Christopher alluded to why I'm making it a 10. You know, the teams are all competitive. I'm looking forward to being a part of every game in Toronto. I envy the fact that Serge has the opportunity to go to every game. Him and Bill Howe should strike up a friendship because they probably could work out a deal. They seem to both have the same attitude. If it's going on, it's happening. Howe already has his Grey Cup tickets, which means Liam is already going. And the excitement of going to BC for the Grey Cup, that's got to be awesome. That stadium is beautiful, and it'll be a great experience going to watch the CFL there. But what makes it a 10 for me is all you guys and all the other people who listen to this program who have helped me to appreciate the game in ways that I could never have appreciated it. Christopher alluded to it when he said about us, you know, enjoying it. Can't wait for the games, because then we'll, he alluded to it. I didn't know if that's what he meant, but we're going to get a chance to talk about the games and look at our teams through a lot of other people's eyes. And that does nothing but make the game more interesting. It does nothing but make being a fan even better. And when you have the time to stop and talk to people who in the stadium format, spend more time yelling at you and putting you down than they do talking to you. This is an insight that you guys give me on a twice a week, and I totally appreciate it. With Bruce John Inch on the sidelines and others who are on the sidelines, Bruce, thanks for listening. He didn't feel like contributing today. You guys make it a 10, but I got to tell you, you guys just make it a 10, because it would have been a 9 and a 9.5 for me, because I can't wait to see Ottawa in Toronto and Toronto in Ottawa. It's going to be great to see, Canadian football in the Canadian Football League with an undoubtable positive storyline. There's nothing more positive, as far as I'm concerned, with the CFL than the fact that they're expanding and considering expansion even further. And that's what this year is to me. This year is the year where Ottawa is going to prove that expansion was a great idea, and it'll make it that much more attractive to repeat and do again. And being with you guys makes it easy for me to say a 10. And I really do thank you guys for helping to make this interesting. Even Manasseh and his negative attitude towards my city and my team, I'll take that any day. And I know Manasseh does it just to be people should not take what he says for what he says. There's always a method to his comment, as there is with Christopher. And every so often, I'm just as guilty. So that's why we're here. We love having fun. We love taking each other to task. And if it gets a little heated, can't help it. We're Canadian Football League fans. We get excited about our game, and nothing can stop us from being excited about the fortunes of our team. And that's what makes it so much fun doing the show with you guys. So thank you.
Mike has left the building.
Has he really? Has he really? Okay. I'm going to play something to end the show. It's an interview with someone I respect and care about a lot, and who's obviously an Argo person. Her name is Lori Bursey. She had the good fortune, and I had the misfortune, of not being at the Rock game this week because I do a football game on Friday, so I missed meeting some guy that used to wear number 31 for the Argos. What's that guy's name? I forget his name. Something to do with a Nintendo. I think his name was Nintendo. No, actually, it was Pinball. Yeah, he was there. That was a lot of fun that I missed, but that's okay. It's okay. So here's almost seven minutes of Lori Bursey talking about the Argos and John's favorite subject, ex-defensive coordinators.
Oh, there we go. Hey, you know, it's amazing where a guy has to go meet an Argo fan. Got to go to a Rock game. Haven't you heard? With me is now Lori. Lori, Prince of the Argonauts. This season is going to be interesting. We have a new defensive coach. At the end of last year, I think there were some questions about whether the defensive coach we had last year was actually interested in still being here.
Yeah.
It was kind of a crazy kind of end to the season defensively.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Frank, and I was probably at the forefront of that. And while I understand that Scott Milanovich and Chris Jones were very good friends, I didn't feel like Chris Jones was trying like he had the year before. I think the players gave up on him, and I'll be honest, I was quite disappointed. So knowing that we have a new defensive coordinator, while he didn't have the best of luck as a head coach in Winnipeg, I'm so intrigued by his record as an assistant coach or as a defensive coordinator, and he comes with very high credentials.
And a lot of knowledge, because Milanovic was the offensive coordinator in Montreal,
yep,
while he was the defensive,
yep,
coordinator. And, oh, my goodness, they won a Grey Cup together.
Absolutely.
So they're hoping to repeat that, aren't they?
Yeah, and I'm very excited about that. And I think as a defensive coordinator, Tim Burke can really bring the players together, because Lord knows, pretty much our entire defense is brand new. So our defense needs someone who has a lot of experience, that can bring these guys together and make them gel, give them a, you know, a couple of months, and, you know, who knows what might happen.
He's a lot like Milanovic. They're both players, coaches. They take the responsibility on themselves. They don't blame people around them.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard nothing but great things about Tim Burke. You know, he's very successful in Montreal. And, you know, I always believe, I've been around football long enough to know that even if you're a great defensive coordinator or a great coordinator or an assistant coach, it doesn't mean that you're going to be a great head coach. So, you know, I really don't want people to think about his head coaching record as a, you know, in Winnipeg.
I think we're very fortunate. I think the Argos are very fortunate that he's taking a step back to his comfort zone.
Yep.
I think he's very comfortable being a defensive coordinator. He's been successful. And I think it's just a matter of bad luck of the team that he was coaching at the time, which was Winnipeg, was a team that wasn't ready to make steps forward. And unfortunately, it was bad for him. But one thing I really liked about him, before I knew he was with the Argos, I really appreciated the way he walked those sidelines and didn't blame the players and didn't lose his temper.
Oh, and in Winnipeg, it would have been very easy.
Oh, very easy.
Oh, my goodness.
Very
so,
easy.
You know, I'm sure he feels like he's in a better place. And what I really like is I know that he was with Shea Emery in Montreal. And so Shea can do a lot of good PR for Tim Burke and, you know, how he coaches and sort of leads
the
team.
Yeah, absolutely. He is going to be the, no offense to being a teacher's pet, but he's going to be the teacher's pet.
Yeah, and, you know, there's, outside of that, I mean, Shea Emery has proven to be an outstanding linebacker. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that really needs to lead the team and you know, provide that leadership in the locker room and bring these guys along, because Lord knows we're going to have a lot of new young guys.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Because hopefully, you know, the good news is that we don't have an assistant that's a rookie. This guy was the head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He was the defensive coordinator for the Montreal Alouettes when they won a Grey Cup. And we all know that when it comes to the CFL, there are a lot of players out there that you can hire, that you can bring into the team. It's just a question of picking the right one. And I think he has the intelligence to know the difference between the right and wrong players to bring in.
Well, you know, there was a reason why he became the head coach in Winnipeg, because of his good record as a coordinator in Montreal and Winnipeg. You know, I always subscribe to the fact that, you know, not the best players are not necessarily the best coaches, and the best assistants aren't necessarily the best head coaches. Case in point, Gary Echeverry was a fabulous defensive coordinator here in Toronto. He became the head coach, and he busted. Same with...
it doesn't matter. The
yeah.
point is, there was a
Absolutely.
Book... When I was growing up, there was a book called The Peter Principle,
yep.
which basically says people get promoted until they fail. So now they're in a position where they're failing.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, what matters, what truly matters, is that Tim Burke was a great defensive coach in Montreal. He wasn't so successful as a head coach
yep.
in Winnipeg, but he's not a head coach here in Toronto. He's playing to his strength. So I think Toronto will be in good shape. They haven't made many moves lately. Are you surprised at how slowly they're moving?
Absolutely. I won't lie to you. I don't think we're going to be Grey Cup contenders right off the bat. So it's going to be a growing process, and we're going to have to be patient for the first couple, maybe 3 months, until, you know, the coaching staff can get these folks together.
Lori, I like to think that we're in the same position Hamilton was in last year. They're starting weak, and now what they do during the early part of the season, like you said, take a page out of your book, after three months, something like that, we're going to find out if they did anything good from the beginning of the season
yeah.
to that point. If they do, we can make it to the Grey Cup. But one secret I got to tell Hamilton and tell the rest of the league, we're not going to lose by a big margin. We don't waste our time going to the Grey Cup to lose.
I know. You know what? I'll tell you something. We have never, since 87, we have never been in the Grey Cup and lost.
That's the way it goes. That's why we didn't go last year, the team to beat Saskatchewan.
We
allowed Hamilton to go get embarrassed.
I always say, in it to win it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Gloria, I'm so glad to see you.
Thanks,
I look
Frank.
Forward to another year with you.
Me too.
Thank you. And thank you for all your hard work with the Friends of the Arc.
My pleasure.
Thank you, dear.
Thanks, Frank.
That was only 10 minutes.
That's all it was. It was only 10 minutes. Actually, it was less than that, but that's okay. It was 7 minutes. I edited it down. Yeah, so I see some of the guys are still in the room. I don't know if we should continue talking. We can. I'm surprised John is still here. He should be in bed. Why aren't you
time
in bed?
Time to call it the night.
Is that what it is? Is it time to call it a night?
It's time to call it a night.
Serge is still here, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was interested, but my phone's dying out. I don't know if you can hear the beeping, but yeah. I'm going to call it the night. Gentlemen and listeners and ladies, have a good evening, okay? Till next time. Adios.
Good evening. Good evening. Until next time. Do either of you guys want to make a long goodbye longer? Chris, I'm talking to you. Christopher, I'm talking to you too. Or he just has his phone on. Well, okay. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been the Candid Frank Live Show. Of course, this is the 165th show. And the CFL is the greatest football in the world. And the proof is in the pudding, folks. The excitement's in the air. Anticipation, baby. That's what it's all about. We've got it going on. And we'll see you when that all happens. We've got a long way till July, baby. But what the heck? Let's do it.